If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
You ever hear of Kevin and Bean?
Yeah.
You like them?
I think they're the bomb.
How could you know so many specific details? That is amazing.
Learn how Britney got her $1 million smile.
Oh, I had one retainer. Oh, it was really gross because it was one retainer. It was like a one. You know how you have the top retainer and the bottom? But it was one. And you put it in so you really couldn't talk. And it had a key and everything that you put in it to turn it to tighten it every night.
What are you talking about?
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, we can't get fooled again.
How come y'all won't just leave a brother alone?
This is fun! I think it's gonna work out!
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And now... our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's a brand new program for Thursday morning.
All right, I have to say it. I wasn't going to say it.
You know how, like swimmers, they work for a year on cutting 1/100th of a second off of their time?
Yeah, that reach right at the very end where they touch the wall.
In NASCAR, if they can get out of that pit, you know, in a half a second faster, they'll make all the difference.
Makes all the difference.
I thought that I had set a land speed record and that I had gotten here with no time to waste before. This morning.
You were wrong before.
This morning at 5 till 5.
Yeah.
I realized I needed to take a shower. Now, 10 after is my absolute limit to what...
Drop dead out the door.
Realized I had to take a shower.
Yeah.
And I hadn't begun to pack for Vegas yet. I hadn't even thought about it.
How does this happen, Kevin?
I don't know. Well, I had poker last night.
Oh, all right.
That's how it happened.
All right.
So I took a nap yesterday afternoon, got up, went and played poker all night. Came home exhausted, went to bed, woke up. So then I'm like, it's 5 till. I'm like, oh, Vegas. Oh, suitcase. Grab, a pink suitcase, whatever's around. And start just throwing stuff in. You always like way overpack when you.
Yeah, when you're in a panic.
You don't know how many striped shirts and shorts to take.
That's right. That's true. It's all pretty much the same.
It's got to take like 20 pair of underwear.
So I'm just throwing everything in there and just trying desperately. And I'm grabbing my iPod. And what else do I need? And I got out the door at 12 after.
Wow.
New record.
Kevin hits the door and we're like, I don't know, a second and a half from the show starting. Hustle, man. Yeah. You got to hustle.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
And red lights? Suggestions.
I'm sure.
They're mere suggestions.
So you have the Hello Kitty suitcase, do you?
Yeah.
Of one of your kids.
And I think I have a sundress. I don't know. I'm not sure what all's in there.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Take pictures. Lots of pictures, people.
But that's not how you want to start your morning.
No, not really.
That's just not. It's even for me, that's pushing it. And I'm okay with getting, last second stuff. That's
you don't
me.
Get stressed.
No. But that was crazy. I wonder what I have in my suitcase.
I wonder what you don't have in your suitcase. That's what's going to be interesting.
That's the problem is you panic that you're going to not have something, so you just throw everything you can get in.
Right.
So I have.
You brought your computer?
Yeah. I could probably move to Vegas for a week now based on what I packed. All right. Anyway, let's take your phone calls. 1-800-520-1067 is the phone number. Mike, you packed last night before?
No, but I live kind of close to LAX, and I'm flying.
Oh, you're going home.
Yeah, so I have plenty of time to.
Yeah. Well, I forgot to mention that yesterday I was leaving too late. I don't want to get to Vegas too late. Uh-huh. So I changed my flight to as early as possible. Like, I'm barely going to be able to make it.
Great. More stress.
Right.
Are we going to be playing, like, recorded Kevin in the night?
Yes.
The last part of the Kevin and Bean Show this afternoon?
Most likely. Yeah. I don't know.
Great.
I don't know why I schedule it that way. You'd think that'd be a little too much stress, right?
I would. For me.
But
that's just me. I think you thrive on it.
I don't know if I thrive on it, but I know that it doesn't usually bother me. Because, there's a lot of wasted time.
Yeah.
I don't have time to waste time.
It is true. It's a lot of
How much time,
time
do I have to waste?
None.
Right. So I have to pack everything in as tight as possible. That's what she said. All right. Time for your phone calls. 1-800-520-1067.
We're sorry. You missed first dial is 0 or 1.
What?
What it do, nephew?
So what it do?
What it do, nephew?
All right, the price today. For getting on the air is a pair of tickets to the NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Championship Race, November 11th through 14th at the Auto Club Raceway in Pomona. Speed thrills.
Woohoo!
Speed thrills. All right, let's begin with Andy. Hi, Andy.
Hey, what it do?
What it do?
Hey, I don't know if you guys heard about this because of the elections, but on Tuesday, the Supreme Court took a case where they're starting to hear arguments trying to categorize violent video games like pornography.
I did hear some of
that. You know, I heard about that in passing, just that they wanted to make it so... What was the deal? Like, even if your parent came in with you, you can't buy...
Well, no, the parents can still buy it for the kids.
No, but I mean, if you're... I'm sorry, go ahead.
But they're just trying to make it where these retailers would get fined up to $1,000 per incident if they sold a violent video game to a minor. But the scary part is they're trying to be really vague about what makes the game violent.
That's, yeah, because how do you do
by
that?
By the way, that's the problem that government runs into with every single thing they try and regulate.
Obscenity?
Yeah, like obscenity and radio for us.
Yeah.
It couldn't be more vague.
It's hilarious because they have you sign things that say, I understand the
right,
rules.
Right,
they don't even understand the
and
rules.
And I always write, it's not possible to understand these rules. So what does one person consider violence?
Yeah.
And the other consider violence. I mean, come on.
It's going to be ridiculous.
And they're also making these rules for a video game where they're saying, well, video games make these kids violent, but, you know, movies and TV and other forms of the media don't. It's just like with comic books. Those comic books were brand new.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous because every other court, the Ninth Circuit Appeal, they all, you know, slashed down these laws, this law from the state of California. But for some reason, the Supreme Court wants to hear it, and it's kind of scary.
Now, when has it already started?
It started on Tuesday.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I do not want some old 100-year-old person in a black robe telling
deciding about video games?
Yeah, that's crazy. And they better not come back with a ruling before November 9th. That's all I'm saying. Call of Duty. Black Ops. Just take your time, Supreme Court.
It'll be interesting. They were actually being pretty fair. They were throwing out things to the guy who wrote the bill, like, well, what about things like Grimm's Fairy Tale? Those are really violent. Do we need to regulate that now?
Right. Well, good. I hope they fall down on the side of we sure couldn't describe what offensive is.
Of course.
Every time they try to describe what offensive is, it's different for every person. So how do you do it?
Absolutely. Why don't we just let parents be parents and monitor what their kids play?
Exactly.
That'd be good.
Because a lot of kids don't have parents. But that's beside the point. If they're going to consider violent games porn... Let's put porn in, you know?
You know, I've always thought...
Might as well put some topless chicks in and have some sex along the way. You reach a certain stage.
You win.
If they're considering it, you might as well.
You know, that's a good point.
Come on now. Let's sex it up. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Let's go to Bobby. Hi, Bobby.
What it do, nephew?
What it do?
What it do?
Hey, so that big building fire in Chatsworth yesterday, I guess... one of the fire trucks parked a little too close and turned into a big crispy marshmallow.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't see that.
Stupid truck
with a bunch of equipment in it. This is weird because, especially in Southern California where it's super dry, when there are fires, the wind can change in a second.
Yeah.
And
it's
so
really scary.
They're constantly trying to figure out where to park, but usually the fire department gets it right.
Yeah, they usually know. And they tell everyone else where to park.
Hey, yeah. Guys, real quick, second question. What's up with the Christmas CD this year?
Same thing as last year?
Sold out?
Yeah, it's sold out.
Yeah. Sold out?
Yeah,
right
good
on.
Thank
pre-ordered,
you.
Sold out.
Right, pre-ordered, sold out. Thank you.
All right, will do.
By our lawyers. All right, thank you for the call. He brings that up because the fire department getting their truck burned up reminds us of the Channel 4 van, the local NBC News van.
Yes, and Chuck Henry.
Chuck Henry is the name of the guy. And the fire department told all of the vans.
All the reporters.
All of the news vans. Right. Hey, everybody, the wind's coming this way. Get in your vehicles and move them at least, you know, a half a mile away or whatever. And everybody did except for this one dude, Chuck Henry.
Yeah.
And then his news van caught on fire. And it was maybe the best thing that's ever happened.
I feel so badly for the people that lost their possessions. You know, the truck, who cares? Stupid truck with a bunch of equipment in it. I was inside the truck. I tried to get it started. Wouldn't start. I jumped out of the driver's seat, and all there was flames. I saw Lee. He was outside, and I couldn't see where to go. He just said, "Hey, Chuck, Chuck," and he's calling at me. It was a fireman. And I just ran in his direction. He grabbed me, and he literally threw us in the back of his truck. Uh-oh, we're in trouble.
We love many things about that. First of which is stupid truck with a bunch of equipment in it. Dumb truck.
Idiot, move your van when they tell you to.
They told him to move it. Then he's crying and he's acting like he's been through. And who cares about a stupid truck? I'm thinking the people at NBC who probably have to replace it for $500,000.
Oh, that was an expensive truck just filled with stupid equipment.
Oh, that's good times. Awesome. I don't play that enough.
No, you're right.
I really love that.
I feel so badly for the people that lost their possessions. You know, the truck, who cares? Stupid truck with
a NBC
carriage. Bunch of equipment in it. I was inside the truck. I tried to get it start. Wouldn't start. I jumped out of the driver's seat, and all there was flames. I saw Lee. He was outside, and I couldn't see where to go. He just said, "Hey, Chuck, Chuck," and he's calling at me. It was a fireman. And I just ran in his direction. He grabbed me, and he literally threw us in the back of his truck. Uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Here's what's funny to me about that, is that he wasn't injured, and he wasn't burned.
No. But he,
why is he crying?
He was. He thought he was going to die. Traumatic, I mean, that really
but
will.
But he didn't.
I know, but.
Traumatic, dude.
By the time they're interviewing
it
him.
It is traumatic.
He's fine. He knows he's fine. And he's sobbing.
Because he came so close to death. That's really.
Because he's stupid.
Yes, but still death.
Stupid truck. Bunch of equipment in it. All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we? We have a little band you might have heard of called the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Maybe once or twice.
And they're going to be coming in studio today.
Yes.
How about that? They have a new book. It's my kind of book, as it is 80% pictures.
So you've already, quote unquote, read it.
Oh, I love it. You can just turn pages and feel like I'm making progress. Never make progress in books.
Yeah.
We have Danny Boyle in studio today talking about 127 hours.
Oh, man. I'm so looking forward and so dreading this movie.
I can't wait. It is.
But it's going to be so awful.
The story is one of the most unbelievable stories. For those of you that don't know, this is the dude that got trapped mountain climbing between two rock walls and had to cut his arm off with a dull pocket knife.
Yeah.
And did it. And he survived, right? He did
it,
got out, made it down safe, and survived.
Unbelievable.
Cut his own arm off. Ugh. We were talking about this in the office yesterday. We were saying, who? I would just go, bye-bye life. I'm not cutting my arm off.
Ralph said, and this was so creepy, he's like, well, you'd have to find a joint because you can't cut through all the bone. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, there's there's a guy that's thought through it a little more than maybe he should have. That's all I'm saying. We also have Dr. Drew on today's show because it's Thursday.
Uh-huh.
We're going to tell you a little bit more about Amy Winehouse's new song, which is fantastic.
Oh, wow.
We have Amber Tamblyn on the program today.
Love her.
She, of course, is on House, and she's also in 127 Hours.
Yep.
And we have your final pair of tickets. We have one pair of tickets left to join us in Vegas. And we're going to give those away as well. It is Kevin and Bean's Vegas Road Trip Singles Party at Luxor Las Vegas. And we have just one pair left. So we're going to give those away today. And then this afternoon, we're on our way to Las Vegas. We'll take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beat. That's next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It is 5:52.
Woo!
This is the Kevin and Bean Show.
Woo!
Ralph Garman's here.
Woo, Vegas!
It's tough to concentrate on anything else when you are going to Vegas.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. So tomorrow's a burn. I mean, really, it's just a waste because we're going to be in Vegas tonight. And today's show might not be so great, but we have
people. Because we don't care and we're in a hurry to get out.
But we do have people to prop us up. I mean, we have Danny Boyle, we have Dr. Drew, we have the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hacks.
It's all good stuff.
Nobodies.
And one
zeros.
One last pair of tickets to join us on the trip.
Yep.
That's got to be for Odd Chick, right?
What? I don't know how the breakdown goes. I mean, we have to have half and half, so I don't know whether they have more guys or more girls.
I don't know with Mike.
Well, fine. You can be selfish. I'm just thinking of the people.
Right.
As always.
I'm good with that.
I'm just about the people. And if elected, I promise my opponent smells. Don't you miss the election coverage?
Not
a
miss
the commercials?
So happy.
Oh, yes, on this prop, no on that prop.
So happy
this
it's
candidate,
over.
That candidate. I miss it. Good times.
Did you know that so-and-so got a C- in English in high school?
I'm just proud of the state of California who elected a dead woman.
We did?
Yes.
What? I didn't know that.
You didn't hear about the dead woman?
No.
Elected? Yeah. She was a representative, I believe, out of the district that encompasses Long Beach, California.
Right.
And she passed away, sadly, about 3 weeks ago.
And it was sudden and no one...
It was a sudden illness.
Wow.
She had been sick, but not that sick, and then she passed away 3 weeks ago. But it was too late to get her name off the ballot. That's her name on the ballot. And she won in a landslide.
Wow.
So now they're going to have a special election to find someone to take her job. But I just find it hilarious that people were voting for a dead person.
Do you think they knew she was... They had to know she was...
Well, here's the thing. The Republicans... She was a Democratic candidate.
Right.
And the Republicans are claiming that the Democrats weren't forthcoming with that information enough.
That she was dead?
They kept promoting her. Because if a Democrat wins that seat, then a Democrat has to fill in that seat.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
okay.
She was very popular.
Okay.
So when the special election comes around, it'll be another Democrat who fills that seat.
I got you.
But she was very popular, and they knew she would probably had won the election if she'd lived.
Wow.
So they're like, yes, vote for her. She's the best. She's dead. And she will serve you well. She's passed away. They didn't really play up the fact that she was no longer with us. And so they just let people assume that she could have fulfilled the obligations of her duty.
Or there could have been a lot of people who knew she was dead but won a Democrat in that seat. So just went and voted for the Democratic
Party.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Wow, that's bizarre.
I just
dead and won.
Yeah. To which, given this current state of government, would anyone really have noticed if they just shipped her to Washington and just sat her in a chair? She probably would have been the most productive member.
How do you think Meg Whitman feels about that after spending $100 million of her own money and living? She's still alive.
Yeah.
Lost.
All right, let's talk about showbiz news, shall we? Speaking of politics, you remember Rachel Campos from Real World Boston back in the day? Back in, I guess it was 97.
Sorry. Yes?
Kevin just disappeared on that side of the room.
Trying to set my chair.
Yeah, and you would.
I didn't know it had a subfloor setting.
You looked like you were in an elevator there. She was in Real World Boston back in 1997. Very popular. Rachel Campos, one of the characters from MTV's Real World. Well, her husband, Sean Duffy, just won a congressional district seat in Wisconsin last Tuesday.
Huh.
And she is apparently a political pundit now. She does a lot of blogging and appears on TV shows and whatnot. I thought that was interesting. I remember Rachel. Speaking of reality television, Pink says she has a sick obsession with abusive reality television.
Yeah.
She claims she can't get enough of Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, what? Really?
Her favorite thing in the world is when he yells at people in his kitchen. Hell's Kitchen, yeah. I gotta admit, I like that, too. He's funny. He's funny.
But
he's not just loud and obnoxious. He's very funny about how he dresses people down. And the people he does it to are just a-holes, just deserve it. They're just losers.
So you're happy that happens to
them. Yes, exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Speaking of reality television yet again, Kim Kardashian has an owie. I don't know if you heard or not.
No.
I don't know how you could avoid it. It's been big, big news. She's broken her toe.
No, not her toe.
Yes. And it wears a camel toe, too. So like, no, it was... she tripped on a suitcase, apparently, and so she tweeted the news, so everyone knows now that she has a broken toe.
Oh, thank God she got that out.
See, this, I know I'm a member of the Twitterverse now. I do tweet.
You did mock it for a long time.
I did, and this is why, though. Just when I come around, I start to feel good about Twitter, then I realize Kim Kardashian is telling people she broke her toe.
It's big news.
There's somebody I follow that I will soon be unfollowing. You can take them off your list of people that you get the messages from. Who is one of these people? Who is today was like, I won't say it because then people know who it is. But it's just the most simple, inane, boring, just, should I have pancakes or waffles this morning? That kind of stuff constantly, all day long.
Is that Bean? Are you talking about Bean?
No. This person makes Bean look like Oscar Wilde when it comes to wit. This is just the innocuous daily stuff. Oh, nail polish is on sale. That kind of stuff.
Is this somebody that you actively decided to follow at one point?
This is someone I know.
Okay.
And so I saw them on Twitter and I was like, oh, well, I like this person. I know this person. I will follow and see what they have to say. Well, that won't be happening anymore. Because it's really starting to get on my nerves.
We'll have to ask Dr. Drew about that when
we'll have to. Hey, wait, it wasn't him.
What?
No.
What?
Brett Michaels wants you to know he's not a home wrecker.
Remember,
I reported yesterday he has an affair with Billy Ray Cyrus's wife, Tish?
Yes.
Right.
Miley Cyrus's mom? Well, he is not happy with me or anyone else who has said that they had an affair. He claims that is not the case whatsoever. The rumors are untrue, and someone is simply stirring the pot.
Yeah.
Cool. He said he worked with Tish and young Miley on a professional level only, and there was nothing between him and Tish. He's not responsible for the... troubles in their marriage.
I thought he would be upset about the timing of it, and he was going to say she was already separated.
No,
blah, blah, blah.
No affair whatsoever. Huh. No affair whatsoever.
How about that?
And speaking of Miley Cyrus, great news. Miley just got another film role. She will star in a movie, an action comedy called So Undercover. Miley will play a tough, street-smart private eye who's hired by the FBI to go undercover in a college sorority.
Stop it.
Are you effing kidding me?
No.
She's going to play a tough, streetwise private investigator. How can you be an 18-year-old private investigator?
She's already streetwise, too.
Oh, man. Stop it. I heard her mom had an affair with a llama, and that's how she got those teeth.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Billy Ray's not even her real dad. She was a male llama. Because she's got llama teeth.
She does have some
big llama teeth. Today's celebrity birthdays. Our pal Kathy Griffin celebrates her 50th birthday today. She probably won't enjoy me mentioning that, but very funny lady. Ralph Macchio, the original, the only Karate Kid.
There he is.
49 years old today, as is Survivor host Jeff Probst. I know you guys aren't watching The Survivor anymore. I picked it up again the last season, and now I'm watching again this current season. He is just the best host on television.
He really is great.
He makes it look effortless and just is engaged in the people and has real conversations and keeps the game moving. And the stuff he does at the tribal council, just seamless. There's a real art to it, and he is the best.
You watch somebody like him who makes it look easy, and you think, oh, that's a cake gig.
Then watch Nick Cannon host America's Got Talent. Compare those two guys.
It's not an easy gig.
No, it's not. Matthew McConaughey is 41 years old today. And MTV VJ Jesse Camp. Remember Jesse Camp?
No, yes.
Super tall, skinny, wild hair.
Right.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be like a kid from the streets, whatever, that they just plucked out of obscurity. And turned out he went to like a private school in Connecticut and he was rich and stuff.
He was annoying.
He was a douchebag. He's 31 years old. We're not happy.
No.
we wish you were already gone, Jesse. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Deny my dear. Deny my dear.
I believe that's the only song we play that has a banjo on it.
Yeah,
I believe that's true.
Pretty good guess.
It's the world-famous K-Rock at 621. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. Dr. Drew coming up. We have Amber Tamblyn coming up in about 10 minutes, by the way. She, of course, is in House, one of the best shows on TV. And she's also in the new movie, 127 Hours. We have the Red Hot Chili Peppers in studio as well.
Yes.
Very excited about that. They have a new book out. And there's a lot of pictures. And they're nude in a lot of them.
They're nude?
Nude. I mean, they're blocked
naked-ish.
And whatnot. But yeah, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. They built their career being naked on stage.
That's true.
Ralph did a story yesterday in the showbiz. He was talking about how upset Rihanna was that she had to miss Katy Perry's wedding. Now, I was not aware that they're best friends, but apparently they're best friends.
And she missed it.
Yes.
She said wasn't the original thing because she had an album coming out and she had stuff she had to do.
She said that she was forced, in quotes, to miss Katy Perry's wedding day because she had to finish up some things on her new album. Now, that seems like the lamest of reasons. I mean, you could reschedule that if it's a concert and people have bought tickets and all that.
Yeah,
I guess,
another thing.
Right, but this seems like it's nothing.
Yeah.
So she said she truly wanted to be there, and I will never forgive myself for that. It was a crazy time. It was a crazy week. I'm switching management. Like, it's their fault. Really, like, she's not in charge of her career.
If she just said, no, I'm going to a wedding.
Right.
She would go to a wedding.
And the manager would say, okay.
Yeah.
Because the manager works for her.
And she's Rihanna.
Manager got fired. Because she's so upset.
That's how
upset she is that she didn't get to go to Katy Perry's wedding.
Lame.
Now, it was in India. Let's be honest. It's not easy to get to. But if she's your best friend.
Yeah.
And you have the means to get there, which Rihanna does. She's got plenty of money.
Yep.
Then I don't know how you fire your manager.
I'm not buying this.
Yeah, it's all weird, right?
Yeah, I think so.
And maybe people just started talking and she was trying to come up with an excuse or something.
Or maybe she wanted to fire him anyway and this is...
Could be, but she didn't show up at the wedding, which was... I guess people... this all started when people started kind of mumbling, hey, wait a minute, isn't Rihanna her best friend?
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. So we have a good relationship with Rihanna, so we figured we'd get her on the line.
Okay.
And find out what's the story behind the story. Hey, Rihanna. Hi to you too. Now Rihanna, are you still best friends with Katy Perry?
I man the Katy Perry kun karate say nice no come no they say Jamaican style no is I Antiguan gain a rakatumpo.
I don't know what that. Okay, that sounds like yes to me.
Oh, that's say yes. My little say chicken head, no kum kurakai dice out of the window.
Right. Was it really that you were in the studio recording your album? You had to do a couple. Because that sounds.
The album is so remember the elevator shaft I need to be thrown it.
Elevator?
Something about throwing an elevator shaft.
Ah, kum papara kutu suyo kundai chicken adrin. Mirigo.
All right, let me ask you about this.
I know caramba taste blood clot.
All right, let me ask you this. Did you fire your manager over this?
Okay. Near the beach.
Bitch, I heard bitch.
I did too.
Okay. No, not the beach, the beach.
Beach. Oh, oh. Beach. Sorry. Press one if you fired your manager. I don't know. I really don't know how to get an answer out of her. So you fired your manager because it's her fault. That sounds weak to us.
I don't say, Mr. Conrad, it's such a weak to you, but come to see my style, alien style. It's no way to show me Irish.
Yeah, I
know. Because of the lime and say, oh, icons with the cook gel, blood clot.
Here's the weird thing about this story, Rihanna, is that you're working on an album, and but it's not like Katy Perry and Russell Brand sprung the wedding on everybody. It's not like they said, "Hey, we're getting married this weekend." So you have plenty of
work to do for tight, but now I see when I come in, nice with the rain and sky. No, come to gun play. I said, "Pop, pop, pop." Come back rock tune to soon. I hear that. Made up.
Wait, are you tell what she's?
Are you singing now?
I may be singing a song with the fable I see a long time island style. I look into the sky and look crying to me with the blood clot. I say, oh my God.
I don't feel like we're getting anywhere.
A lot being said here.
Come back to the rakatam pam pam pam.
Okay.
Beacon.
I think.
Beacon, oh, come from the big oink.
Did you say oink?
I can come from the biggest oink.
What did you do? This is the Kevin and Bean Show. We have a huge program for you today. Dr. Drew's going to be on the program.
Oh, he can't make it.
Yeah. What?
Oh, he won't be on the show today.
Are you doing producer Dave?
Oh.
Alex, our producer, is on vacation because she's gone. I don't know. She went to a wedding or something.
Oh, Alex had to go to a wedding.
And Dave is not Alex. And
No,
I'm rad.
He believes that he's rad, yes. And but then there was a week, it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago, where he was in charge and everything fell through.
It was last week, I think.
Everything.
Yeah, everything went away.
Just every time we had an interview scheduled.
Seth Ragan cannot make it today. He's in traffic.
What? Like, what?
I don't know when he'll be here, but it's not my fault.
He always says it's not his fault, too. Yeah, that's the key.
And yet, when Alex is here, mm-hmm. things go pretty smoothly.
We found
it
out,
seems
I forget,
like.
Who was it that we found out with 5 seconds to go in the song? The song literally had 5 seconds left in it.
Was it Seth Green?
And Dave goes, I'm having some problems. I was like, hurry it up. I can't get Seth on.
I've been on the phone waiting for him, but he did not pick up. So right. do something else.
So then he said, do something else.
And we're like, a song or something.
What? How are we supposed to just do something else?
Seth Grind can't be on the phone. This is not my fault, though.
Oh, my God.
That's a new wrinkle to Dave, isn't it? It's not my fault. Yeah.
Yes, that's his refrain lately. Everything is it's not his fault.
Never. I mean, and he's never used to be that way. But believe a movie's being made about him. That's how bad it's gotten.
Oh, guys, bad news. I don't know. I keep calling and calling that number. Rich Eisen won't pick up.
Oh, by the way, just let me interrupt for a second and say the reason we're doing this is because we have Amber Tamblyn on the show.
Oh, she's not ready yet. I can't get her, but it's not my fault.
She's supposed to be on the show right now. So I left that part out.
Do something else.
But it's not his fault.
You're trying to do a radio show, but you never imagined you'd have to work with producer Dave.
Oh, guys, I got some more bad news. Seth Green won't pick up his phone. I don't know what to do. Anyways.
Male guests, female guests, none will be booked. Producer Dave.
Guys, I know it's crazy, but I have more bad news. Joe Rogan is stuck in traffic. I don't think he's gonna make it for the next break.
When you least expect it, he will murder. your show, Producer Dave.
Guys, bad news. We're going to have to reschedule a lot because the phones are not working at all.
Guests, equipment, ratings, none are safe, Producer Dave.
Guys, just play something. I don't know. The music and the little commercials are all gone.
Your audience will be tortured. Your careers will be murdered. Bye, Producer Dave.
Oh, I have bad news. Guys, I have set fire to the other half of the radio station. What should I do? It's not my fault.
Your ears will cry tears of blood, Producer Dave.
Guys, very bad news. Ariane Celeste is sick and will not be coming in. We might be able to just talk to her on the phone. All I know is it's not my fault.
This year, morning radio will be morning for radio, Producer Dave. This film has not yet been rated.
See the giant red lettering there?
Yeah, urgent. Very proud of himself. He's urgent. Finally got Amber Tamblyn on the phone for
urgent.
Us.
Amber Tamblyn's on the line.
Yeah, right now.
I did it. Hey, Amber.
Poor Producer Dave.
Producer Dave, you don't know the details
yeah,
there.
Poor us, Amber. Poor us.
Producer Dave. Did he talk to you in his Producer Dave voice, which sounds a lot like Lieutenant Sulu from the old Star Trek show? I swear to God.
No, I didn't hear that at all.
He puts on a very professional voice when he has to deal with the guest, Amber, and we think it sounds like Sulu from Star Trek.
It's bizarre because he's a Mexican guy, and he's like, yes,
you'll be speaking with Kevin and Bean momentarily.
What the hell is that? Why are you talking like that? But then...
I missed that whole part of it when I spoke to him.
Well, he did. See, that's the problem. He drops the ball everywhere. Amber, one of our favorite people, you have two projects that are...
You got a lot coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, the party.
First of all, let's talk about House.
Oh, the season has been so good.
Yeah.
And Amber's just coming on.
I know it.
Finally, they're going to get some. I think next week is your first episode, right?
Yeah, Monday. I thought it was this last Monday, so I TiVo'd it, and then I was forced to watch part of the World Series. Yeah. Terrible.
Fox kind of delayed your entrance because there was some baseball going on.
My boyfriend loved it. He was like, just learn something. What? A ball and a bat?
Hey, I'm with you on baseball. That's a bad surprise. But you thought until that moment that was going to be your house, your episode.
Well, yeah,
house.
I just wasn't paying attention. I was working so much, and I was like, don't forget to TiVo it. And then I watched part of it, but it was dumb. It's not worth the 5 minutes we're going to be on.
Okay.
The
all right.
Like,
all right.
Me looking at commercials, it was stupid.
We'll be the judge of that, first of all. So tell us about your character on House.
She's actually named after my real life best friend, who's a med student. Her name is Martha Meredith Masters, and I actually feel for her because I realize now that people can find her, and she's a real person, and that's really her name.
Right.
But they, the writers for House came to me and said, "We'd love to write a character for you. What do you want to play?" So I've always felt like Meredith would make a really great character if I exaggerated her as a human being.
You mean Meredith Martha Masters?
Martha Meredith Masters.
Oh,
that
okay.
is my real friend.
Okay.
Her name is
MD.
Meredith.
Right.
So I created a character that's sort of like a young female House, which is kind of what Meredith is like. The character of Martha is incredibly intelligent, hyper intelligent. She probably has maybe even Asperger's because she's so socially awkward, and she has a hard time communicating about the most basic things. Which unfortunately sometimes is funny to watch.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, with House, I think that the rest of the team looks at her and just sort of rolls their eyes and goes, "Why is this joke about fungus funny? What is wrong with you?" and House kind of likes it. He kind of likes the fact that she's intimidating to them because she's, you know, like 25. She's still a med student. She's not even a doctor.
Right.
He brings her on as a med student. It's very interesting.
And he certainly, that's been his role, is super, super, super bright, but socially just hates everyone and everything.
Right.
Yeah. So when you put two speeding trains of social handicappedness on the same track and then they hit, that's kind of what's going to happen.
Now, Amber, is your friend kind of socially retarded too?
No, she's not. Well, she is a little.
She is. You're gonna mock your friend, and then everyone's gonna know about her.
Exaggerated.
But the thing is that it's an exaggerated version of her. But Meredith will be the first to tell you. I mean, the whole thing about making jokes about fungus or something. She'll be the first one to say, "Yeah, I do that." that her jokes go way over people's heads because she's so brilliant.
Yeah.
It's really.
Well,
like
wait a minute. Let me ask a follow up question. If they were smart enough to hear the jokes and understand them, would they laugh? I mean, are they funny
that
jokes?
That is a good question.
Nobody's smart enough to know.
I'm not smart enough.
Yeah. Okay.
So you can, I don't know. I think in her med school world that those things work.
She's quite the jokester.
You are dooming your friend.
Your friend. What's her name again? What's her full name again?
Why, you going to Google it?
Yeah, of course.
I'm just thinking her friends and coworkers are just going to mock her. Oh, you're the girl from House. You're the one.
Because she loves you. You can't because she loves Kevin and Bean. You're going to ruin her life.
We love her too.
Yeah.
Martha Masters.
Even if she has the Asperger's.
Now listen, we're familiar.
Yeah, no, she doesn't have it.
We're very familiar with Asperger's. Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
All right. So House Monday night at 8 on Fox. That's when that starts. Let's talk about 127 Hours.
Opens on Friday.
Yes. Yes.
We're all saying that we can't wait to see this film. We're huge fans of Danny Boyle, and James Franco looks terrific in this. We're dying to see it, but at the same time, we're all really sort of squeamish about the idea of going.
Yeah, slightly horrified.
Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it? I think that has become so exaggerated and incorrect. It's just, here, I'll give you a great example.
How do you exaggerate that? Did he cut off his arm or not?
Yeah, but it's 3 minutes of the movie, and if you go see any horror film, they show things that are 20,000 times worse than this.
Yeah, but that's fantasy. Jackass. That's fantasy, and this is reality, and we know that.
Yeah.
I think that's why it makes us all hinky.
Those of you
don't... but again, it's so quick. It's over so quick that, anybody that I know that's squeamish and hates blood and hates anything of this nature, you look down for 3 minutes and it's over.
Sure.
I'm
squeamish that way. I don't like blood, but it wasn't going to stop me from going because the story is so unbelievable. This guy gets trapped and has to cut off his own arm.
You have to watch it just because it's the mastery of Danny Boyle. I mean, the fact that you can create a heart like pounding film that makes you like unable to sit in your seat about a guy who does nothing for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Is a testament to what a great director he is.
And I also think because we know the story and we know how it ends, the tension building up to that moment must be just unbearable at points.
Yes, but also, you read everywhere, like, people are fainting and all this stuff, and it's just, I think that you're going to go in and go, oh, really? They fainted over that? it's kind of like a symptom pool where people are hearing that people are fainting, so then they go in and they're like, this must be the part where people faint.
And then they faint, and then somebody else faints because they fainted. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy you're talking about, Danny Boyle, of course, Slumdog Millionaire. He was, he's
and
the
Train Spotting and so many wonderful films.
He's this film's producer, director, and writer, right?
Yes. Yeah, he wrote it with Simon Beaufont, who also wrote Slumdog.
I have a great, great clip that I'd like to play from the movie 127 Hours, and this, I think, sums it all up. There you go.
That's all you need to know.
That's what you need to know.
It.
Wow.
I believe that's the rock falling off.
That's the rock. Falling rocks, exactly.
That's correct, and that's when he's trapped, and then he has to get out somehow. And we had the conversation in the office yesterday. I'm just saying bye-bye life.
Yeah, Kevin would not he would not free himself.
I'm out. I had a good run.
I'm not sure I could either.
Right? I mean, I know it's different.
I give it a shot.
It's different if you're forced with that decision, but I don't know how you could do that.
Mm. I would take both arms off.
It wouldn't be producer Dan that would make you do it, make you go all the way.
Nope, producer Dan would not do that.
He'll be alone in the radio station by himself without me.
Yeah, true.
I must cut my arm off.
Amber Tamblyn has a lot going on, including the World Series on her TiVo. She's going to be on House this coming Monday night. House, one of the best shows on TV on Fox. And then 127 Hours opens up this Friday, tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
So
we're having Danny on the show later on today, by the way, Amber. You have any
messages? Oh, you are?
You have any messages for Mr. Boyle?
Or embarrassing stories or anything?
Oh, just tell him that he looked fantastic last night, and I'm sorry I didn't get to say hi.
All right.
Well, I guess that's the most boring thing I can
No, you snubbed him. This is great.
The story wearing a merkin on the set, but we'll save that for another time.
Merkin story. I love merkin stories.
All right, one more time the clip. 127 hours.
All right,
that's,
got
James,
it.
That's James Franco's Merkin falling off in that clip, I think.
That's exactly what that is.
Amber, we love having you on the show. Thank you.
Likewise.
Okay. Bye.
Yeah, mama, this must be my dream.
What did that do? Did that blow your mind?
That just happened.
That's right. Marcy Playground on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ at 657. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. Ralph is here now with a look at the showbiz.
Yeah.
And then Dr. Drew.
Yeah. Not a real doctor, by the way.
It is a real doctor.
You know, when they started making TV shows out of Twitters?
Yeah.
Out of Twitter accounts?
Yes.
I thought we were at the precipice. I thought we were right at the edge of the gaping maw in the earth of entertainment.
Right.
The giant chasm that we could all just go plummeting into.
This is the my dad said, that one?
That one, and they're doing one, Don't Tell Dave or whatever, about a right. guy who tweets about his roommate. And then there's another Twitter show in the works called The Girls Upstairs, about a guy who just listens to the girls who live in the apartment above him talk, and he tweets what they have to say. And these are going to be on television. These are going to be television shows.
Hmm.
And I said, we are just one step away from falling into that cavernous opening, that bottomless pit
right.
of television ideas. One step away.
Are we still one step away?
No,
or are you?
We've taken the final step. We've taken the final step because NBC has announced they're picking up a series based on the books of Chelsea Handler.
Oh,
that's tight.
Chelsea Handler.
Wow. She writes books?
Talentless essence receptacle that she is.
Oh, my God.
Has made a deal with NBC to make a series based on her book. They're using the title from her book, Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea.
How's
See, because she
be a-
drinks so much. And she has a lot of one-night stands. Don't you get it? How funny that is?
And so she's going to be the star?
Thank God, Lisa, no. We are being spared that, at least. Because most of these books are based on her her escapades in her 20s, you know?
Right.
And she's not playing 20s anymore.
Right.
Right.
So they're going to cast someone else to play Chelsea Handler in the books based on her volumes of comedy that she's written.
Wow.
So now we've taken the final step.
That's it.
We are James Franco now heading down into that crevasse, and that boulder has pinned us down, and it's time for us to cut off our own arms.
Just before this decision, we were above the precipice, and we were looking down,
down.
I don't know, should I jump?
We're doing shows on Twitter, what do you think? Huh? No, oh, Chelsea Handler, let's just, it's all over. It's all over.
Well, that doesn't sound good.
If I was in actual show business, I would retire. Luckily, I'm not.
You're not.
No. Let's talk about television, shall we? Interesting list from Advertising Age magazine that says the TV you watch says something about your personality.
Oh, no.
I'm sure.
Lisa.
And this makes perfect sense.
Because I love Dexter, and I mean, this is bad for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you're a psychopathic murderer. Don't get me wrong. No, but they say, like, they've broken it down via, you know, the kind of advertising that's done on that kind of products that are purchased by people who watch these particular shows. It's interesting to break down socially what kind of people watch what kind of shows.
Okay.
For example, if you watch Men in Trees or Brothers and Sisters,
yes.
you are an idiot. It says it right here.
Does it say that in
no,
the study?
Actually, it doesn't.
That is shocking to me.
No, it says people who are not creative tend to tune into reality shows like The Biggest Loser.
Hmm.
People who are not creative?
The people who watch those kind of shows are not creative.
Okay.
Strange. Okay.
It kind of makes sense. People who are really into reality television, you got to think, are probably not the sharpest knives in the drawers, right?
I don't know. I like them.
Traditional people, conservative people,
yes.
people with middle-class socioeconomic backgrounds and tend to lean politically conservative.
Right.
Love Dancing with the Stars. They respect authority and have their feet firmly grounded, it says here in this article.
Respect authority?
Who wrote that? I don't know what that means.
Who made this
study
list?
From Advertising Age.
That's ridiculous.
Listen, I just know my parents love Dancing with the Stars. They're pretty traditional, so they plan out. Family Guy viewers are 61% more likely to break rules than people who don't watch Family Guy. We're rebels.
We're rebels.
We play by our own rules.
What about people who do voices on that show?
They're ridiculous.
They're the devil.
They are cards that need to be dealt with.
Ralph does a voice on the show. A bunch of
47 people have watched the... One more time. 47% of people who watch The Office think they're superior to other people.
Really?
Yes. Isn't that funny?
Hmm. But isn't that show sort of designed that the guy in charge
is a bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's
But why would you think that you're better than other regular people in the real world just because you're watching that show?
What did you do?
Isn't that interesting? And creative people are 41% more likely to watch Mad Men.
I love that show.
There's one person here who will not watch it.
And 17% more likely to tune into Glee, interestingly enough. Because that's the creative people's TV shows.
Interesting.
Glee and Mad Men.
What about South Park? What about the rest of the shows I like?
This is just a few excerpts from the entire study. You can pick
up the Fantasy Factory.
Read Advertising Age yourself.
What if you constantly watch The Occult and Hitler and Hitler's Bodyguards?
Like you?
Yeah.
I would say you are a dark, dark person.
And then the history.
Who is desperately jonesing for some smack.
The History of the Wrench.
Yeah.
Watch. Who's on Modern Marvels? The Wrench is awesome.
The Wrench is awesome.
That just happened.
He just said that out loud.
Yeah.
Take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. We're running out of time. Kathy Griffin's 50 years old today. Ralph Macchio, the only Karate Kid, my opinion. Whatever with Will Smith's kid. He's 49. Jeff Probst, also 49 today. Matthew McConaughey, be a lot cooler if he did. He's 41 years old. Diddy is 41 as well today. And former MTV VJ Jesse Camp celebrates his 31st birthday. I'm just gonna take him off
I'm gonna
the
suggest
list,
right? He doesn't make the list.
Yeah,
right?
It's been a long time since anyone cared about Jesse Camp. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the show business.
Also on Thursdays, we talk to Dr. Drew. Hey, Dr. Drew.
Kevin, welcome back.
How are you, man?
Good.
We have many things to talk to you about.
Yes.
The first of which is a story that Ralph came across about alcohol. Ralph, you want to summarize that?
Yeah, I read
this. I can't even say alcohol.
No, you can't. That's how drunk you are.
Yeah.
Okay, I read it in The Lancet, which is a British medical journal. And they, I guess you know about this, Drew, but they took all the drugs, about 20 different kinds of drugs, and they gave them values. They actually had numerical values to the different effects it has on your body, on your social experiences, on your friendships, on your relationships. And they tallied them all up, and they found of all the drugs that they studied.
Hang on, I want to test him. I want to test Dr. Drew.
All right.
Of all the drugs they studied, what's the worst?
Heroin.
Wow, you didn't read this article.
No, it's alcohol. I'm sure it's alcohol.
It is alcohol, yes.
I'm sure it's alcohol. And you know, and again, it depends how you measure it, but almost always tobacco or alcohol comes up as number one. Whether you measure it in terms of the socioeconomic impact or lost days at work or number of people affected, or if something, sometimes people don't think about this. Listen to this just from a medical standpoint. Alcohol is the only drug for which the withdrawal is commonly fatal. It's the only drug.
Wait. Commonly fatal.
I mean,
not just you can die, but
it's if a bad withdrawal. If you have full blown DTs, you're probably going to die.
Wow.
And it's the only drug that causes cancer, in addition to tobacco, obviously. But alcohol contributes to cancer of almost every organ in your body. You don't think about that. But it is associated with esophageal cancer, it's associated with head and neck cancer, colon cancer. It really is a very, very problematic drug.
Why is it so good, though?
Yeah.
Well, when you guys are in Vegas, you ask Kevin.
We're going to Vegas today, man. Let's change the topic. I know I brought it up, but...
They said out of 100 points, 100 being worst, it rated like a 72. It got, if you looked at the social ramifications, physical harm to the human body, and then other drugs, like cocaine was in the 50s.
Think about this, too. I just think about other stuff that adds to that, which is that every... adverse health effect. Adverse health measurement in, say, an adolescent or young adult, you always find alcohol. That is to say, whether it's rape or an accident or STD or unwanted sexual contact, whatever it might be, you always find alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Is that partially because it's legal and available and encouraged?
I guess so. I mean, that has to be partially part of the deal, but that certainly doesn't contribute to why it causes cancer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just the one that's been around the longest, and so we don't think of it the way we should, perhaps. I think it's more it than anything.
But you're right. It says in the article, when it comes to lapses in judgment and morality and in terms of the psychological effects, it is by far the most deviant than any other drug you can take in terms of affecting your personality.
So, Kevin, we're here this morning. It's part of an intervention for you.
Kevin, we all have something we'd like to say to you. Kevin.
You know what's funny about that, Dr. Drew, is for the longest time, every time Dr. Drew would come into the studio, I would go, I wonder if today's the day.
That's why we only have him on the phone now.
Well, we're waiting until you go to Las Vegas. Then we're going to bum your high.
You can't do that once I start drinking. All right, let's talk about Demi Lovato. I'm sure you've seen this story. This is an odd one. She was touring with the Jonas Brothers,
yeah.
And she dropped out of the tour to go into what was labeled rehab. I'm not sure what it was, but she said she was a cutter
And what was the other reason
The story was that she was a cutter and also was dealing with some eating disorder issues.
Eating disorders, yeah.
Yeah, so that's that's sort of a typical combination. Eating disorder patients often cut. And in my world, we call it the trifecta, you know, eating disorder, drugs, and cutting. It kind of goes together quite a bit.
Why does eating disorder and cutting go together?
It means they're a trauma survivor, typically.
Oh, I see.
So whether it's neglect or physical abuse, sexual abuse, whatever it might be, there's some kind of childhood trauma. And that is usually the outcome. What we look at it as a bid to regulate emotions, primitive bids to try to do whatever you can to feel better when you don't have other emotional resources at your disposal. And here's the thing that bothers me about that story is you don't go to rehab for that.
Right, that's what I was asking.
You go to a psychiatric hospital. So in the world of media, suddenly every time somebody's admitted to a psychiatric hospital, they're in rehab.
Right.
That somehow is a more acceptable, more digestible sort of nugget for people. But it sounds like unless she has drug addiction, then you go to rehab. By the way, that term has no meaning either, but at least
right.
I've sort of capitulated to that.
Sure.
But it sounds like she's in a psychiatric hospital.
Is it possible that all of her problems came from touring with the Jonas Brothers?
It didn't help.
Yeah, that's all right.
Medical opinion.
Listen. If you agree, you'd might start cutting yourself.
I know there's a lot to it, Drew, but real quickly, cutting is usually associated with someone who's in such emotional pain they're trying to mask it or regulate it by inflicting physical pain on themselves, right?
It's what we call a primitive bid to feel better. In other words, when like eating disorders, too, it's the same way. When you just have, you can reach for a drug, you can cut, it's just a behavior that's very primitive to try to do something to feel better.
But it's always destructive.
Well, but it feels better. And it just like banging your head against the wall or throwing up, it's all destructive.
Yeah. But you feel better when you throw up.
Hey, by the way, I just want to mention to you guys, I'm heading up to Santa Barbara like right now. I'm going to be at the Arlington Theater tonight with our friends up at KGEE.
Oh, fantastic.
And so please, everybody, come on and check it out there. It's a draw. We're going to be talking about issues like this, in fact. It's going to be a talk for the National Council on Alcoholism. We'll be talking about all these fun things that just bum your high.
Oh, I thought you were going to do your one-man Mark Twain show.
It's a secret. I got the mustache in my pocket.
Do you take questions at something like that, Dr.
Yeah.
Drew?
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Absolutely.
Do you take your shirt off?
No, I wait for you for that, my friend.
Oh,
yeah. Are we going to have the VH1 Celebrity Cutters anytime soon on the show?
You know, it's funny you would say that kind of thing gets brought up once in a while.
Yes, and?
And I don't think that sounds like a casting nightmare to me.
Come on. Time to start branching out. Expand the brand, Drew.
Celebrity Cutters.
Wow.
I'm in.
Just Drew running around with Band-Aids all for a half an hour.
And Dr. Drew, just to clear this up, you're a real doctor.
Real doctor. Okay. By the way, speaking of that kind of programming, Celebrity Rehab will start December 1st.
Yes.
Oh, right around the corner.
I have actually seen none of it, but I lived it. Yeah. And the people that are watching it saying it's the most intense thing they've
seen. But are they going to stop yanking us around and actually put it on December 1st?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Absolutely.
And you can email me if you want my Celebrity Rehab drinking game I like to play at home. I've got the rules if you want those, Drew.
We've established that alcohol is the most dangerous drug.
Right, and then you do shots every time that's said.
Okay, have fun in Las Vegas.
Every time somebody demands someone's cell phone, you finish your drink.
Have a great time in Las Vegas.
Thank you, Dr. Drew. Bye. Right now, let's talk about Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we've heard any new music from her, as she has been drinking and partying in the islands for...
Seems like it.
25 years?
Yeah.
And yesterday on the Showbiz Beat, Ralph mentioned that Quincy Jones has a new album coming out. And Quincy Jones is a super producer. He produced Thriller for Michael Jackson, for example, mm-hmm. One of the biggest albums of all time. And his albums have, you know, he collaborates with people. He's not a singer, so he has people sing on his albums. And one of the songs that has been released that's going to be on his album next week is Amy Winehouse. And it's a cover of I'm trying to remember what year Ralph said it was, 1963?
It was a long time ago. A
song
yes.
called It's My Party. It's my party. I cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. You will cry till it happens to you. The who?
Yeah. Nobody knows where my Johnny's going. Judy left the same time.
I get the idea. I don't want to buy it.
How dare you? Amy's on the phone right now.
Oh,
hi.
Sorry.
Hi, Amy.
Hello, this is Amy Winehouse, and I'm not a man. I'm actually Amy Winehouse.
I took that away from us. Damn it.
Hey, this sounds like a guy. We're looking for Amy Winehouse.
I just said a dog. I'm Amy Winehouse. How you doing?
Amy, how long has it been since you've come out with actual new music?
It's been 4 years since I've had any new music available for people, but I think it's going to be great.
This is going to be great, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. We were just listening to it. Did you hear when we were playing it?
Yeah, it's that great, doesn't it?
Is that the finished version?
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful, and I think it's going to be just a smash, smash hit.
Sweet.
Hold on a second.
Got a knock at the door?
Oh, that's better.
That was not a knock at the door.
You know what?
What?
It's my cocaine, and I'll snort if I want to.
Right.
Snort if I want to. Snort if I want to. You would do blow if you were me. Yeah, that's great.
That is good. That's better than the one I heard.
Yeah.
You're working on some new stuff then.
I am. It's great to be working with Quincy Jones.
Sure.
And we're so happy with the track. We got finished working on some other stuff too.
Okay. What other stuff? For your own album?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Like what?
It's like this one. It's my vodka and I'll drink if I want to.
Yeah.
Drink if I want to. Drink if I want to. You would drink too if it happened to you.
That sounds a lot like the last backing track. It sounds like the Quincy Jones backing track.
No, it's completely different. It's a whole different
it is.
Song. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's great.
I must. My ears
there must
not be.
There must be subtleties that we're
subtleties
missing.
That we're missing.
No, you're not musicians, so you can't be expected to know, but it's actually quite different.
But do you have something else that you could...
Yeah, I got this one.
Okay.
It's my heroin, I'll shoot if I want to. Shoot if I want to. Shoot if I want to.
A little off on that one.
You'd find a vein too if it happened to you.
If it happened to what?
Yeah.
I don't understand that word.
Yeah.
I listened very carefully this time.
Yeah.
And it still kind of sounds
sounded
like
the last one.
It did. It did.
I don't understand what you're saying.
A little.
This one's totally different.
Okay.
New one.
Okay. All right.
It's for loco and I'll drink if I want to. Drink if I want to. Drink if I want to.
Now this is a hit.
It's usually drunk by black people, but I like it.
That is the one right
We're
there.
In.
For loco. That's got to be the name of the album, too.
I am a hello.
Huh? I'm sorry.
What did you do?
Why does everyone say that? That's not cool. We have the Kevin and Bean Vegas Road Trip Singles Party at the Luxor Las Vegas. That's happening tonight. We're leaving today. And we have one last pair of tickets. We've given them all away. We saved one last pair for today. But you either have to be out of work or just willing to ditch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're going today, and but today I mean like noon.
And they're probably not going to give you permission if you call now and say, I need the day off. You just have to fake it. Yeah, you're sick. That's all.
So that's what we're going to do, and we're going to do it with the Las Vegas version of Lick Lisa.
Can you lick Lisa? I think you'll find it's hard. But if you do lick Lisa, something hot's waiting for you.
Hit it, Steve.
Lick, lick Lisa, lick, lick Lisa, lick, lick Lisa.
That's important. That's an important
that
rule.
Is the
That's
rule.
Her rule, not ours.
Now, the liquor today is one of our new interns.
New intern, Wario.
Wario. Call him that because of the Mario Brothers. He looks just like the good Mario Brother, but he's the evil one.
Yeah.
Okay.
The evil Mario Brother.
So Wario is going to be doing the licking today. Is that cool, Lisa?
Sure.
Wario looks overjoyed.
He hasn't said one word to me.
He hasn't said one word
to
me.
The whole time he's...
He's silent but deadly.
He is silent.
Very quiet. All right. So let's begin.
This is how we play the game. Let's give a quick description before we get started.
Oh, I just took forgetting everyone knew.
Well,
Go ahead.
Let's reset just in case people don't. We're going to ask Lisa a question about Las Vegas. The answer will be a number. She will give us her best guess as to what that number is. You just need to say, is the actual number lower than what she said, higher than what she said, or is she right on? If you lick Lisa, you'll get put into a drawing and you'll be eligible to win the final pair of seats on the party bus to Las Vegas.
All right, so we're going to do a drawing. We only have one pair left. Let's start with Christine, a law student. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
Hi, Christine.
Welcome to Lick Lisa. So Lisa answers first, and then we get your input, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Lisa, we'll be partying at the beautiful Luxor Hotel and Casino. The Luxor features the world's brightest, most powerful beam of light. You can read a newspaper to it 10 miles into space, by the way. You could read a newspaper 10 miles into space from that light.
Wow. That's great, because I was wondering this morning when I woke up, I wonder if I could read a newspaper if I was 10 miles in space.
It's visible to airplane passengers from as far as 275 miles away. Lisa, how many watts is the light in the tip of the Luxor Pyramid? How many watts? Now, the average, you know, light bulb at your house is like 60, 75 watts. It's a light bulb. How many watts does this light...
2 million, Ralph.
2 million.
2 million watts.
All right, Christine, is that right on, or is the actual answer higher or lower?
I'm going to say lower.
Lower is correct.
That's
yes.
correct. It's
by a
lot. 371,000 watts.
That
That's
doesn't seem like enough.
You've licked
2 Lisa. 2 million watts.
Wario, do
Wario,
your
lick Lisa.
Come
lick
on
her.
Over.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wario with authority.
All right, with authority.
Yeah. I'm
Wario's
surprised.
Funny because when you gave the question, he looked over at Lisa very seriously and went, two.
He walked over and grabbed her head with both hands, but gently.
Yeah.
Yes.
And went for the cheek.
All right.
Lover,
not a
there
fighter.
Might be something going on with him.
So Christine is in the drawing. Let's go to Clara. Hi, Clara.
Morning.
Hi, Clara's a nurse. We might need her skills.
Yes, we definitely will.
In Vegas.
Are you married to David?
All right, Lisa, here's your question. It must be the all-you-can-eat buffets because Las Vegas, as the shrimp consumption in Las Vegas is higher than the rest of the country combined. In pounds, approximately how many pounds of shrimp is eaten in Las Vegas every day?
Every day?
This is every day, each and every day. How many pounds of shrimp is eaten per day in Las Vegas?
3,000.
3,000 pounds.
Is that the exact right answer, Clara, or is the right answer higher or lower?
Lower.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 60,000 pounds of shrimp a day.
No.
Oh, my God.
Is it
no.
in Las Vegas?
I was going to guess five, and I thought, oh, that's too high.
60,000 pounds of shrimp per day.
Clara's just calling us liars.
Well, it's true.
I'm sorry, Clara.
It's sorry, true. Clara. You don't get the...
60,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of shrimp.
All right, let's go to Randy. Hi, Randy.
Hey, how you doing?
Randy's a freelance writer, which means unemployed.
Yes.
He's got a lot of free time to travel.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Here's your question, Lisa. Las Vegas... is the home of heavy drinking and bad decision making. With that in mind, weddings are the second largest industry in Las Vegas. On average, how many couples get married every day in Las Vegas? Mm. Each day in Las Vegas, how many couples are getting married?
100. Oh, each.
Each day.
Each day.
Day.
Every day.
Oh, okay.
On
okay.
average, how many weddings every day are held in Las Vegas?
Let's say 800.
800 is,
weddings a day in Las Vegas.
Is that right, or is the actual answer higher or lower?
I'm going to go higher, actually.
Sorry, lower. 315 weddings a day happening in Las Vegas.
That's a lot.
It's a bad guess, but he was worse.
It's a bad guess, but he was worse.
That's right.
That makes you feel good.
Sorry.
So far,
315 weddings a day is a lot of weddings.
I know.
It is.
And how many get annulled? Is a better question.
280.
Yeah. How many of them serve shrimp?
apparently a lot.
George is a fireman. We might need his services as well.
Yep, that's true.
Tonight.
Christine's looking good, by the way. Yeah. Maybe he's just sweeping this. All right, George, you ready for the question?
I am ready.
All right. Lisa, Las Vegas, as we know, is the real happiest place on earth. How many visitors does Las Vegas get every year? How many people visit Las Vegas each and every year?
I hate this.
Yeah, it's hard to guess.
God.
Just go with two, Lisa.
Go with two.
That'll be as good as my guess. So I'm going to say 4 million.
Four million people visit Vegas every year, she says. George, is the actual number higher, lower, or is she spot on?
I'm going to go higher.
You'd be right. 37.5 million visitors to Las Vegas every year.
So I should have just said two.
Yes. You should have. It was the
you
same
gave
thing.
The same answer.
George, you licked Lisa. Congratulations. Wario, give her a big lick for George.
Uh-oh.
Oh, here we go. He's peeling back the sleeve.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
Nice. Good. All right.
All right, let's pick a winner out of the two.
Let's play the big music before we know who the winner is.
I wish we had more than two to draw from, but... the winner is the dude we just talked to, George.
Yeah. George!
How about that?
Congratulations.
Outstanding.
Are you able to get away from the fire station today?
They're my normal days off, so it's bitching.
Fantastic.
Bitching.
Perfect.
We'll see you in Vegas.
See you in Vegas.
Lick, lick Lisa, lick, lick Lisa, but keep clear of her vagina.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. It is 7:56. This is the Kevin and Bean Show, and coming up just after the top of the hour, the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
What?
In our studios. How about that?
That's too good for this show.
They have a great book out now that has an amazing amount of great photos, and I've really never seen a band take more bad photos and revel in, like, they put out the worst ones, like, what I would consider the worst. Every single one of them, they look goofy or just bizarre, or weird. Their eyes are closed.
Naked.
A lot of them are naked.
A lot of naked.
A lot of naked. More naked than we need.
I don't think they're vain guys.
They're not. That was my thinking when I was going through the book. Is like, when you try to take a picture, you want yourself to look the best you can. That's not the case with this band, which I love. All right, we'll take we're going to do the showbiz beat, and then we'll take a quick break and come back with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Wow. How's that going for you? Did you get much sleep last night?
No, not much at all. No, I was playing poker.
Speaking of the Red Hot Chili Peppers, interesting news coming out about Damon Albarn from Spin Magazine. He, of course, the ex-Blur frontman, who's also working on a fourth Gorillaz album as we speak. He has developed a trio that he's recording with, featuring himself, Nigerian drummer Tony Allen, and Flea on bass.
Hmm. I have a clip of the band if you'd like to hear it. So that's, it's different.
Just keeps getting funnier. Damon says the trio doesn't have a name yet, but they're almost finished recording their debut album, so they better get on it. That's all I gotta say.
Get on the stick,
and
people.
Be a real band. Don't be cartoons this time. What the hell? Monday should be interesting. A sit-down interview, the first I can remember since he left office, with President George W. Bush. He'll be sitting down with Matt Lauer on NBC's Matt Lauer Reports.
What's that?
As a TV show, Matt Lauer Reports. It's like a special.
Like a news special. It's a special thing?
Yeah. He will talk to Matt about his new book. He's written his autobiography. And apparently, in the book and in the interview, he says one of the low moments in his eight-year presidency, one of the worst moments of his entire eight-year presidency, was when Kanye West said, George Bush doesn't care about black people. He said it was an all-time low for him.
No kidding.
Yes. And he calls it a disgusting moment, pure and simple. The idea that he would be a racist because of his response to Hurricane Katrina was not terrific.
Look, he could have a terrible response to Hurricane Katrina, and it could have nothing to do with that he doesn't like black people.
Right.
I don't know.
Now, coincidentally, he doesn't like black people. but that's just a coincidence.
I always wondered when this interview came out what he would think of those 8 years, because I'm sure his impression of those 8 years is very, very different from everyone else.
Did pretty good. Pretty happy with him. That's what I'm guessing he's going to say.
The only regret was Kanye West.
Yeah. Except for that Kanye thing. Everything's pretty good. Economy, jobs, war. Turned out well for me.
That's unbelievable.
And Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
She's just so yummy. And I don't say yummy often.
You don't.
But she qualifies.
She does.
Got a new movie coming out. She's just signed up to star in a film called Under the Skin. She will play an alien in the movie.
Okay.
Who disguises itself as a mesmerizing woman who snares human prey on remote highways and other desolate spots with voracious sexuality.
Ooh.
Okay.
She sucks you in by being super sexy and then devours you. That's a movie.
That's a trade-off I'm willing to make.
Yeah, I would be.
That isn't good for you.
I would be easy bait if an alien looked like Scarlett Johansson wanted to do me. I'd be lunch.
I agree with you 100%.
Production begins next spring, and it'll be out in 2012. Can you just clip the end off of that piece of tape a little weird?
I agree with you 100%.
I don't know what happened to that.
Yeah. Pam Anderson? Today's celebrity birthday is Kathy Griffin's 50 years old today. Ralph Macchio, the Karate Kid, is 49. Jeff Probst from Survivor turns 49 as well. Matthew McConaughey, he's 41 years old. And Diddy celebrates his 41st birthday as well. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat. Here I go.
Guys in the Red Hot Chili Peppers did more songs we could play. That'd be great. But it's not possible.
Sorry.
Flea and Chatter here.
Alternative rock has been very, very good to us.
And you've been very, very good to us as well. That's the seat where Anthony's going to be at some point.
He's going to come. Well, being the wild adventurer that he is, he's on his motorcycle broken down on the freeway somewhere.
Oh, good. So if you see Anthony and he looks like he's trying to fix his motorcycle, pick him up and bring him to the station, please.
Give him a ride.
That would be cool. Tell me about this book and how it came about.
Well, it's initially, I don't remember how it got started, but we got together with a friend of ours, Brendan Mullen, who was a great man and a real kind of fixture in the beginning of punk rock in Los Angeles in the late 70s.
Is he kind of the guy who got you started? Or did I misunderstand that?
No, he's someone who gave us some of our very first gigs.
He did, okay.
Yeah, he used to book this place, the Club Lingerie, up on Sunset, and we first played there in 83. And he used to book us. But Brendan, you know, for me and I think for me and Anthony mostly in the band, when we started off playing in a band in Los Angeles, the punk rock scene and the bands that we admired, and for myself, you know, the Weirdos, the Screamers, the Germs, Black Flag, like these bands, it was like they had mythological status for us.
Right.
You know, the bands that started this scene, and it was like, for me, it was like the most romantic, exciting, dynamic, you know, tragic, beautiful, poetic, animal, feral, artistic, poetic, beautiful, intense thing, you know. And Brendan was a real crucial part of that. You know, he started the Mask Club and in the beginnings of punk rock in Los Angeles. And anyways, we had been friends with him through the years, and he booked us early and believed in us.
Hey, Anthony.
Yeah.
And hey.
Sorry to interrupt.
And so we got together with him and started organizing this picture book. And the picture book is, for me, I don't know, you know, I think for all of us it's different, but for me, the idea of it was, in the beginning, was kind of a silly thing. It was just like something to put out to, I don't know, like a promo thing or something. But
yeah, you mentioned in the book you didn't think about adding any writing or anything else. Just let's put out a book of pictures, sort of. You didn't want to make it too deep or whatever.
I don't know, I just wasn't that excited about it. You know, maybe because I was just having a short vision or whatever. But as time went by and I saw it, it's a beautiful thing, you know, and I feel like just pictures, even though there is a lot of text in it, the pictures themselves and looking back through it, it's profound. It's
really nice. Is an amazing history of where you guys have been at each stage of your careers. What year did you officially start?
Roll on, brother.
30
Roll
years
on.
Ago?
We started close to 30 years ago. Yeah, we started in 83. Was it February when we did our first gig?
I want to say it was in and around the month of February, 1983.
That's about as close as you can get. It is a while back, right?
Yeah, we predicted that we would last until March at that time.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was our prediction. Do this for about a month or so and see how it goes.
So you didn't really have grandiose plans. Most people that become successful never could ever see that.
Well, by April, we started getting grandiose.
Is that right?
Actually, yeah. Well, the thing is, we like our big first gig, our big debut, we had one song. It was about 2.5 minutes long. So
did you stretch it or did you just play the 2.5 minutes?
No. Well, we stretched it with a little choreography.
Before. No, choreography was show two. Two.
Right?
Yeah, Pac Jam was two.
So you didn't have any choreography, just the 2.5 minute song.
Yeah, but we weren't interested in stretching things at that point. We kind of liked it short and sweet. And the only thing that stretched were Solomon's eyebrows after the show. He's like, wow, can you guys come back next week?
And you're like, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Most bands, if they lose a member or change a member, it can ruin everything. How did you guys manage the revolving door of people and still stay a strong group? I mean, you were kicked out at one point?
Yeah, at least one point. Maybe a couple of kickouts. I'm not sure. I can't remember. One for sure. One good, healthy.
One good. Anthony, you're no longer in the band.
Yeah. Which, by the way, I welcomed at that point in time.
You did.
Yes, I was. Thank you for removing me from this burden. But I think we got lucky. I think more than anything, the gods were smiling on us repeatedly with finding new people to play with that had indeed magical chemistry and a dedication to music and energy and just making something cool.
Because chemistry does change a lot. One person can change the whole chemistry. And you had
Shante,
and you had all these different people that came in, and Navarro.
That's why I say we got lucky, because what are the odds? I mean, finding it one time is already kind of a bizarre miracle in life, and then having that, you know, guys that went to Fairfax High School together, it sort of makes sense. You know, we're coming from the same place. But then finding Chad and finding John and, you know, taking it to yet another level was just ridiculous and fun. And but that, you know, it happens. I think if you're open, if your little receptors are open to new experiences and new people. I mean, when Chad marched into the room, he brought something that we could have never predicted, or even if we were writing a little want ad, you know, we want this. Chad wouldn't have been in that want ad, but then when he got there, he was bolder than anything that we could have asked for at that time.
So you were just like, okay, this makes it easy.
You're like, shave your head, you big gullet. No Bon Jovi's in the band.
That's right.
Bon Jovi on drums, ladies and gentlemen.
My Bon Jovi jean jacket.
What was the part, I think it was you, Flea, you were describing him as keeping you from floating off into the ether, into the sissy boy ether, I think you called it. That's Chad's role.
That was a good quote. I read that myself.
Well, you know, it in our band, you know, kind of like a sports team or something, everybody fulfills a role, you know, And you know, we can bicker like a bunch of old ladies, you know.
Which breaks up a lot of bands. That's why I brought up the whole chemistry.
But the thing is, it's like, and, you know, certainly we've been through times where that was a tenuous situation just because of us, you know, all being very different people and seeing one truth from a bunch of different angles and it all being a different thing, you know. But as time goes by, you really learn to value people being different, even though it might be frustrating in the time, because you realize it takes different pieces to make a whole, you know. And in terms of people coming and going, I just think, like, the strength of our band and what we've been able to do from the beginning is let nature move it, you know, and that's what we've always done.
We've talked to so many bands that have that, like, they just... You know, Metallica is a good example. Or there are a lot of other bands where they just, for a time at least, they say, we can't do this anymore. Rage Against the Machine. We can't keep doing this. It's just too painful. Well, and yet somehow you guys have figured out a way through all of that. You start, when you start and you think you're going to be doing it in a month, it's very different than when you've been doing it 25 years and you've got a lot of success and you've all had to kind of change together.
It could be painful.
Yeah.
Growth is painful.
It could be joyful.
Can be.
Yep,
it can Let's be a- get a percentage on the road here. Let's get percentage of painful versus percentage of joyful.
Well, thank goodness for both, first of all. If it was just a joyride the whole time, I mean, I don't think we would have stuck with it. I think it giving us the opportunity to experience pain and love pain and know what that is to get to the other side.
And the other side means something, right? Because it's
then it means something and we all grow up together and have new experiences and... It's just kind of it's whatever the ratio is, thank goodness for both. And by the way, I love that Partridge Family album cover up there. That is just bringing me back.
We have a good collection up there.
Yeah.
You know,
I had this monkey.
We have the monkeys.
I hope you did.
Three Stooges.
That's good.
Air Supply. We got them all. We have a collection. Red Hot Chili Peppers are here. Anthony, Flea, Chad, they've got a new book. Is it out now? I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry not to know. I don't have that info.
It is out now.
An Oral Visual History by the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Brandon Mullen. That's the name.
Cow.
And it's fantastic. It's really good. I don't need to see this much of you, Flea, ever, really. I don't think so.
I saw it yesterday.
You saw it yesterday?
Yeah.
He likes to get naked, doesn't he?
He does. He does.
I honestly, like, for me, if we just, like, didn't have to wear clothes because it's not cool, I'd be naked all the time.
You'd be perfectly happy. All right. Well, get the book today. The guys are here, Red Hot Chili Peppers. We'll take a break and come back on the Kevin and B. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are here, and if you'd like to meet them, you can today at the Grove at Farmer's Market at the Barnes & Noble. They're going to be there at noon, and you have to have a wristband to get your stuff signed, so go there. It's first come, first serve. Barnes & Noble at the Grove Farmer's Market at noon. The Red Hot Chili Peppers will be there. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. The Red Hot Chili Peppers are in studio with us now. We got Anthony, Flea, and Chad. Anthony, tell us about your thoughts on this book. And
thoughts on the book.
When they came to you and said, we want to do it, or are you interested?
Yeah.
What did you first think?
We were in the middle of a very, very long tour. So my judgment and my perception and perspective and outlook on life were very weird.
You were just weary.
I was weary. I probably hadn't slept. I was, you know, had a broken foot and was just in Baltimore. But I did have memories of looking at, photo books of bands that I loved over the years and being moved by them to see the process and to see the kind of years unfold. And I remember seeing a gigantic Rolling Stone book once, and I got to see them when they were kids and when they first started, and kind of look in their eyes and see where they were at as an upstart band. And I thought that would be kind of cool. And we do have a very long history. And I also think of Hollywood in the early 80s as a very, very magical place. And, you know, we started traveling young and saw a lot of the world. And Hollywood was special at that time. And I knew that we had a bunch of pictures from the early days. And I thought it would be cool to kind of tap people into the scene that we came from.
And it really is. There are a lot of great pictures, but there's also newspaper articles and banners that, you know, you would put up, advertising a show. And there's a lot of weird stuff in here that does kind of tell the history better than words could.
Yeah. Yeah. We were enthusiastic when we began, you know, we all lived in the, if not the same room, the same house. And when it was time to play a show, it was like, okay, you make the flyer. I'll get on the phone and tell people we're playing. You know, you go down to the bar and sit at the bar and tell all the girls to come. And it was kind of all in one.
Who got the bar with the girls? Which one of you?
You know. Hey, now.
That means Anthony.
No. We thought we were the shiznit at that moment.
Sure.
So we didn't mind waving our flag, but...
there are a lot of pictures of you waving your flags in here, and it's that's a little troubling, I do have to admit.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Anthony, you guys have a wild stage presence, which has always been entertaining. Flea looks like his head is disconnected from the rest of his body, and you're jumping around, and you hurt yourself, and you slam into drums, and you jump off things. What's the worst injury that you've had while on stage?
Well, first of all, I think that comes from the music. I don't think it, you know, we didn't ever sit down and decide
right.
to have a wild show. When those notes start flowing, you know, there's something in the air. Injuries were many. You know, I fell onto my head off a 10-foot stage onto a concrete floor one time.
Well, you weren't able to go on? Or were you?
I know. They wheeled me off to the hospital. I probably tried to go on until I realized yeah. that something
you were
was
in
wrong.
An ambulance.
Yeah, but...
Do people think, wow, that was an amazing, that's so what? Is he really hurt?
Well,
is it like that?
The best part was running into another girl who had been at the show who had broke her femur or something like that dancing. And so we were both in the emergency room side by side. And she's like, hey, great show. I was like, hey, thanks for coming.
That's pretty cool for her.
Yeah.
She had to be bummed. She's at a show. She loves you guys. Then all of a sudden she's in the hospital. She's bummed. And then you were nice enough to show up.
It happens.
With a bad neck injury. How about you, Flea?
I don't know.
You get injured?
I mean, I've been, you know, in various states of disrepair playing gigs. I remember smashing a bass once and it flying back and whacking me in the face and having to get stitches in my head.
Was that visible to everyone or was it in
the... Yeah, it was in the encore. So it was like afterwards I worked off and I was, you know, just suffering from a pain, but it happened so quick and, you know.
Now, Chad, you just beat stuff up, though. You don't...
Yeah,
you don't get injured, yeah, I don't imagine.
No, I'm my own business.
You hit other things. Yes.
Well, I must have taken a bottle in the head once or something.
Yeah. I remember from time to time I'd kind of tip things over and the drums would somehow fall off the drum riser. And
what do you do at that point? You just lay down on the ground and keep
once,
playing?
No. I was going to go over with the drums, and unfortunately, the cords from the mics wrapped around my foot, and I pushed one thing over, and it was a big, large cymbal, and I went with it and almost got impaled, like, yeah.
Yeah, that's not where you want to get impaled.
He can handle it. He's big. He's strong.
Yeah.
Didn't hurt him at all.
Also, back in the day, he used to frisbee cymbals out into the crowd.
Oh, good.
Which was, yeah.
Good.
That was good.
Only when my local team was insulted.
Beheadings love company.
That was before the days of lawsuits, I imagine. Now you can't even throw drumsticks, it doesn't seem like, without getting sued.
With your live show being so demanding, so physically demanding and so grueling, how have you guys maintained the ability to do it for so many years? I'm sure it was a lot easier in the Fairfax High days.
Just get stronger as you go along, that's all.
Yeah, not really, actually. Like, I feel like we got better at it as we went on. Like, in the beginning, you know, you play a show and you just go, you know, you tap into this, like, feral part of yourself and let it all go. Because, you know, it's just the nature of the music. And
you're not paying attention to what you're doing physically.
Yeah, but in the beginning, I know for me, like, I would get exhausted and want to collapse and go back to my hotel room and feel like I can't make it. I'm going to die. I can't keep doing this night after night, you know, with like 8 more months of tour in front of me. But as time goes by and you realize that you do survive it, you start thinking, okay, this is survivable. And not only is it survivable, but you learn ways to, like, you know, boost your energy and keep your body strong and keep your mind focused on the task. And
is there a live show in shape? Do you have to work out to literally, like, if you're about to start a year tour, you got to think,
the tour is what gets you
in
shape.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So the early dates get ripped off. That's what you're saying.
Not really, because the early dates you have, we've never played this new music before, so you're extra excited, and then you kind of hit your stride. It's all one big marathon.
And also, it's like, I just feel like, in playing the music and in, like, the physical aspect and, like, everything tied together, the key to being powerful, like, emotionally, physically, all those things, is really getting yourself out of the way and letting the God speak. You know, I mean, that's the thing.
It's funny. I how do I say this? I laugh at people who say that kind of stuff most of the time, but not when Flea says it. For some reason,
because it comes from
his heart. I can tell he means it.
Yeah, and he would climb over.
I had a person throw a wine bottle at my face once during a performance, which was kind of disorienting because it was full of wine and it hit me right in the bridge of the nose. And I was like, okay, I have a show to play here, and it was early in the set. And but I was a little upset at that person for throwing the wine bottle. And the next day, I was sauntering about in San Francisco where the show was, and this person came up and said, "You're not going to believe what happened. We knew who threw that wine bottle at you. It was this kid in our high school, and the girls that were at the show surrounded him the next day at school and gave him a good old-fashioned female whooping." And I was like, okay, I didn't even have to call security on that guy.
I love it.
The girls at school took care of
him. They policed it for you. I like that. An oral visual history by the Red Hot Chili Peppers is the name of the book. You can meet them again at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove at noon today. Only those that have a bracelet will be granted admittance, and you can get a bracelet by going down there and picking up the book. And it's so well worth it. We have a little bit more time. If you'd like to call, 1-800-520-1067. Is that cool if we take some questions?
Call on.
And then we have some autographed copies of the book for you. If you get on the air and you can ask the Red Hot Chili Peppers a question, we'll do that next on the Kevin and Bean Show. How do you decide to end a song like that? It's the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ at 8:45. This is the Kevin and Bean Show. How do you end Give It Away with,
Yeah, I think...
And go, yes.
It was, I think it was the inspiration of the Jew's harp that Pete Weiss was playing.
Right.
It kind of established a vibe and a tone to end a song like that.
You guys mind taking some phone calls?
Let's take them.
Sure. All right. We've got the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the studio. We have signed books for everybody that gets on the air with a question. Let's begin with Debbie, who's calling in. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Lisa Day.
She's not. She actually had to move so that we had room for everyone in here. I'm sorry.
Oh, kick out the girl. Oh, no worries. I want to start by saying I love you guys. Huge fan. Thank you, Anthony. Your book, Scar Tissue, huge deal. I'm 30 days sober of alcohol today.
Nice to meet
you. Thank you. My question is, you guys have had an extensive career, and it's been amazing. A lot of heartache, a lot of tragedy, a lot of miraculous, you know, events. Is there any part, any song in your history that you just wish that, all three of you, any one particular song you wish you just didn't have to play again at another concert?
That's kind of a great question.
It could be songs that you loved, but if you've played them a million times.
Yeah, no, that's a very legitimate question. And it's probably more than one. There's probably a pretty long laundry list of songs.
Well, I hope one of them is not Storm in a Teacup. I'm a huge fan of that song.
Well, the thing is that there's times, like on tour, where you get really burnt on it, but right now we haven't been on tour in like 3 years, so they're all
good.
Fun to me right now.
They're all fine, yeah.
We are going to name our next band Kick Out the Girl in your honor, by the way.
So you'll know that was after you, Debbie. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hold on for your signed book. Let's go to Alex, who has a question for the band. Anthony, Flea, and Chatter here from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Hi, Alex.
Hi. Morning, Kevin Bean.
Hi.
I'd like to know, has the writing process for the new album changed since Josh joined the band?
Well, I suppose every writing process has its own personality, but that it's still four guys in a room writing music together.
Yeah.
And I would say the big difference writing-wise for this record is Flea got his piano playing together.
Awesome.
And so instead of him coming in with really cool ideas on a bass guitar, he would often come in with really cool ideas on the piano. And Josh is also a piano writing person, so he would also come in with piano songs.
Is it better because it's a more formed version of the song than just a...
It's just different. You know, I mean, the piano is an amazing instrument, and it's also that thing of when you're doing something new, it's really exciting.
Right.
You know, what do you think, Chad? What do you think? It's different.
Oh, well, I think that it's different because it's just a different instrument that we really never used before.
And so Flea's doing it now, and Josh can do it as well, and
yeah.
Helps you.
Yeah, and also, just to further that you know, changing, you know, John Frusciante, who is such a powerful, unique, and dynamic creative force in our band, very prolific, having a new guy who's a completely different person. You know, I mean, we're still the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but it's a much different feeling. And even though any transition like that is not without its humps,
of course,
you know, you have to get over, which are always exciting. It's exciting to to do something new with a different feeling and a different energy, and healthy.
And he's also a guy who hasn't Josh. That is not the prolific John, but the prolific Josh. He's a guy who hasn't really been in a rock band before. He's had a lot of different bands that he's played with and for and a part of, but this is now his band. So he came in with sort of a lifetime of music, and now he has a place
of different experience than you guys.
Of different experience, yeah. But also just like a real reservoir of chords and ideas. And I've always wanted to, you know, have a home for this groove or this chordal progression or whatever. And now he has a place for that because, you know, he's not playing with Gnarls Barkley or PJ Harvey or all these other bands that he's played with before. He's playing with his band, and so he came with a lot. He came with a lot of material inside.
Did you know
him.
That before you got him, or was it a pleasant surprise?
Hadn't thought about it, and realized, wow, this kid really has a lot inside of him, and now he's got a place for it. So
I like every decision I've asked about you. Your answer is you didn't think about it. It's really just that's how it works.
It really is the best way to go.
I mean, yeah. You do think that there's got to be a master plan someplace, and somebody's making all the moves for the right reasons. And
yeah, but also
a lot of times that kills the creativity.
We knew that Josh had the goods, just his energy, and he's a very tasteful and smart guy. And you know, he's played with us before in sort of a rhythm capacity. Mm-hmm. And just a human being that we wanted to hang out with, and we chose wisely.
All right, we have.
I didn't even know or anything.
You didn't know anything about
that
him.
Anthony had a clearer vision than me. I didn't know. I knew that I liked him. And
right.
I knew that he loved music, but I had no idea what it was going to be.
Well, that's a good surprise, then, right?
Music is always a good surprise.
We're running a little late. We have time for two more questions. One is Jason. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
Hey, Jason.
Obviously, greatest band in the world. A couple quick questions. I was wondering if you guys had any more dates available as far as when you guys are going to do more book signings, and what's your least favorite song to play? Because I love all the songs.
We already got the least favorite, and that's a long list. But
yeah, we skirted the least favorite question.
Once already.
Yeah, we're going to do a book signing every day for the rest of our lives.
Two a day.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, because we were like the weeks leading up to this, we said, we can't wait to not play music and have fun and go sign books next Thursday.
No, this is it.
This is what you look for, right? The signing.
Yeah, no, right now this is the one and only book signing that we know about. Something tells me that we'll get cornered into another one along the way. But we're going to make the most of it today.
And I think I asked you off the air the timeline for the new CD. When do you think?
I think the beginning of summer 2011, which is meant to be a monumental moment.
All right.
And just for the world as a date in general.
And finally, let's take Noah's question, because I know once we ask this question, Flea will talk forever. So go ahead, Noah.
Hey, good morning, you guys. I know how passionate you guys are about your Lakers.
I'm fired
up right now.
Fired.
How we feeling about this three-peat, and we already starting off 5-0, you know?
Love this team.
Doesn't sound like a question, but...
But we're happy to talk about the Lakers.
I know.
Love this team. Love the way they've come out so far. Lamar just looks better than ever. Pau Gasol is a genius. Thank you for putting him in our team.
No kidding.
Couple good pickups with Barnes and Blake, too. They're not too shabby.
Our bench is ridiculous. Bob Forrest likes to call them the B-Boys.
The Renegades. They're called the Renegades.
Phil Jackson named
them. Bob Forrest likes to call them the B-Boys.
Christmas Day, you guys. Christmas Day is going to be huge.
Yes. You have tickets for us?
Come on, you guys are sitting down below, way down
below. Do you have tickets for him is a better question. What do you guys think about, finally, what do you guys think about Miami? What do you think about that whole thing?
What, I haven't heard anything about
it.
Great
city. Great city.
Miami.
Yeah. But I got to say that you know, in all the areas of my life, I try to be a mature and a tolerant person. But one of the fun things about sports, for me personally, is to be an obstinate, pig-headed child in my enjoyment.
That's the fun
and
of it.
One of the things I really enjoy is working up a good old-fashioned hatred. And Miami is definitely a target of
that.
We've
had Boston for a long time. Now we've got Miami as well.
Yeah. I mean, the Boston, they're a bunch of evil, green, you know, awful shells of empty souls. And Miami, they're just arrogant pigs.
I'm going to take my talents to Barnes & Noble now.
Yes, right, you are, as a matter of fact. Your talents are going to be there at noon. The Red Hot Chili Peppers, Anthony Kiedis, Flea, and Chad have been our guests. An Oral Visual History by the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Brendan Mullen is the book I would highly suggest.
Brendan, we love you.
It's Brendan!
Fantastic book. So pick it up. And guys, thanks for coming in. Thanks for all the years of the music. We can't wait to hear the new stuff as well.
Thanks for having us today.
Thank you.
Nice to see your face.
Ralph is here with the Showbiz Beat.
Danny Boyle coming up next. Director of 127 Hours.
Yes. Right?
Looks awesome, though.
It does.
127 hours, 27 days. He's got 27 weeks coming up. This guy's got a fetish.
He does have
He's hung up on 27. All right, we get it. You love 27. We get it, Danny. Relax, man. Speaking of movies, Johnny Depp has decided to do a little method acting research for the role in his next movie. He'll be playing...
Yeah, right. Nice try.
Yeah. He'll be playing Tonto in The Lone Ranger.
Hey!
Tonto?
Yes. Why are you so confused? You know Lone Ranger and Tonto? Yeah. You're familiar with them?
Who's the Lone Ranger?
They haven't cast Lone Ranger yet. But he's going to play Tonto. And the word is he wants to live with a real tribe on a reservation. He wants to live with the Indians for a while to try to get a feel for what he would like to depict Tonto as a true Indian, as opposed to the more stereotypical Hollywood Indian he has been portrayed as over the years.
Sure.
So I think it's going to be a great movie.
I said Tonto because that's like being Robin in the Batman and Robin story.
Oh,
you know?
No.
It isn't?
No. Right. They're much more equal partners than Batman and Robin. If anything, Tonto was sort of the kick-ass guy.
He was better? Okay.
He ran the show. He drove the bus.
All right.
Lone Ranger just went behind, leaving Silver Bullets behind. Hi, Silver. That's how Tonto.
I wasn't aware of that.
He's so swarthy. More movie news. Emma Watson turned 20. By the way, in April, has the final installments of the Harry Potter franchise coming up. Turns out she is now worth an estimated $40 million.
Wow.
At the age of 20. Yeah.
$40 million.
Yeah. It's not too shabby. She used to get just $75 a week allowance when she started the Harry Potter series. Her parents kept the money, gave her 75 bucks a week, you know, for cigarettes and beer or whatever she was working on.
Cigarettes.
Good money.
Weed.
And then her dad sat her down when she was about 17 and said, we need to have a little talk. You're rich!
We blew all your money, honey. Sorry.
She seems like a pretty smart girl. She had to know how much she was making. She had to know it was there and in an account.
Yeah, but when you're a teenager, you really can't wrap your head around those kind of numbers and know about
that's true.
Business managers and investments and that kind of stuff.
How much that really is.
Dad finally sat her down when she was 17, kind of helped her through things. But she said she probably won't need to buy any lottery tickets in the near future.
Did she say, F you, Dad, I'm out?
No, apparently her family is very functional and she's got a college education and she's doing well.
Well, that's not an interesting story.
Clearly they're English.
As opposed to Heidi and Spencer.
No.
They're not back.
Who are now, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, are less... than broke.
What? Really?
Less than flat broke.
Meaning
they owe about $2 million in back taxes.
Oh, my God.
That's the best news ever.
San Francisco Chronicle also says they reportedly have moved in with Spencer's parents because they had to get rid of their home. Spencer apparently thought the show The Hills would go on for another 5 to 10 years and says they didn't save any money.
Jeez.
This is the moment.
They're out.
Yeah.
We've all been waiting for
them. They're done. They're not just broke. They owe $2 million in back taxes. It's even better.
And you'll notice we haven't really heard anything about them in the last few weeks.
Yeah. Oh, this is sweet.
Just clean air for a change.
This is sweet.
So, I'm thinking IRS should press charges. Or whoever they owe it to should take them into custody right now. And then death penalty. Death penalty.
Yeah.
Today's celebrity birthday is Kathy Griffin. Celebrates her 50th birthday today. Happy birthday, Kathy. Friend of the show, Ralph Macchio, the Karate Kid. He's 49 years old. Survivor host Jeff Probst celebrates his 49th birthday. Matthew McConaughey,
He's 41 years old today. Happy birthday, Matthew. Diddy celebrates his 41st birthday. That's how many times have you asked for that piece of tape, by the way?
Four.
How many times has he given it to you?
Zero.
Yeah, I went to get it up, and it was F Hipsters instead, and it wouldn't really work.
You're pretty spectacular.
He's bad today, right?
He's way bad.
I was up late playing poker.
Yeah, and he's the one that's acting like he's had
you're
no sleep.
Actually, but
he's always
him and producer Dan.
Yeah, producer Dan's not doing a very good job today.
I'm Ralph Garman. I want the show.
This is the Kevin and Bean Show, and we are joined now by Danny Boyle, who is the director, producer, writer, grip, food services.
Best boy.
Great photography.
Very funny.
Yeah, we did it all for 127 hours, and it opens tomorrow.
Just him and James Franco in the rocks with a camera. That's how they made the whole film. Three-man crew.
For people who don't know the story of 127 hours, encapsulate it for them.
It's about that guy, Aaron Ralston, who in 2003, he went canyoneering on his own in a very remote part of Utah, and he got trapped by a boulder. His right hand was trapped. He was standing up, but trapped, couldn't move. And he ran out of water after 2 days, 3 days. And then after 6 days, he cut his arm off to get out of there. And he somehow managed to live, get out, find help, and get back to hospital. And he's become a kind of motivational speaker, really, telling people that, you know, no matter what, don't never give up, basically.
Right. And we were having this conversation in the office yesterday, and it's hard to put yourself in that position for real, but I'm dying.
Yeah. Kevin, I think most of us
Kevin
are.
Would give up.
I'm not going to cut my arm off.
You would.
I wouldn't.
Well, you'd try, but I'm sorry. a lot of people just couldn't get through it.
Yeah, you might not succeed because he had some skills that helped him do it, but you'd definitely do it. We'd all do it.
I'd like to think that's true.
I would cut off both arms and a leg just to show how tough I am. That's what I would do. I'm so much tougher than you are.
Tell us about James Franco and how he's the one. How did you pick him?
Well, it was weird, actually. It was Pineapple Express was very important in this, because I loved that movie.
Me too. It's a great film.
I mean, I liked him as an actor before that. He's a very, very good actor. But when you see them do something like that, I remember thinking that. I remember, because I grew up watching Scorsese do with De Niro, those early pictures.
Right.
And then I saw him do Rupert Pumpkin in King of Comedy, and it's like, whoa!
It was a revelation.
It's a revelation, isn't it? It's like they can do the whole arc. And I felt that about James in Pineapple Express. Because in this, he has to occupy all these different tones and ranges. You have to feel very upset with him, and then he's very entertaining. He goes on a talk show at one point, a radio talk show. He kind of imitates all the voices, like all you guys, kind of taking callers, phoning in. And he has to take you through that whole journey, and he has to make you live through the amputation of the arm, which is not easy. But the empathy he creates with the audience means that we don't get people walking out, which I thought we would.
Right. But, well, that's the fear, I'm sure, going in, is that that moment is tough
just
to show.
Too intense for some people.
It is too intense. We do get some people being carried out, but nobody's walked out. Nobody's kind of like... And people do hide their eyes, and they kind of... And the weird thing is you sit behind people, and they're humming. They're kind of... You can hear them going... Mm-hmm.
They're humming.
Just to get through the moment.
Like this.
Because the tension is unbearable.
Yeah, to fill their ears with a different kind of noise.
Sure.
So, and he does all those jobs for us. And most importantly, he takes you through to this kind of euphoria at the end where he gets life given back to him. In the most impossible circumstances, he gets a second chance.
Were you worried about bringing this to the screen? Because it seems to me like my first impression would be a guy stuck in a rock is not a movie. You know what I mean? Like, there's not enough action. There's not enough.
It doesn't seem inherently cinematic to have a man trapped by a boulder for 2 hours.
I know. That's what it looked
like. That scare you?
Well, I looked in people. When I was explaining the way I wanted to do it, I could see that look that you're describing in people's eyes. But I always thought it was amazingly cinematic because he's very resourceful about the ways he tries to get out there. So it's got a lot of physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an emotional journey, the most important journey of all in feature films. Because it's not a survival story in the sense of a TV special or a drama documentary. He actually goes on this journey where he realizes the people he's taken for granted, the people that he's really moved away from at the beginning of the film, they become his lifeline back. And he has this video camera, which is true. He took this video camera and he left these messages, which he thought were his last will and testament.
Wow.
Where he reaches back to these people in his life and apologizes and kind of begs forgiveness and kind of, if he can only get back to them, and it's their that strength, that kind of invisible umbilical cord pulls him back somehow, gets him out of there.
Now, the real guy, did he, when he got out and he was healthy and he was fine, did he go back to the videotape and erase some of it? Like, to my third grade teacher that, I want to punch you right in the face. Take that stuff out, no?
No, he didn't. He doesn't show them to many people, but he showed them to us, and they are very... He tried to keep very dignified, actually, because he was very conscious that his mom would see it.
Oh, sure.
And he didn't want to make her... you know, the
too
path
upset.
That she, to
But
you know,
don't you start, like, yeah. losing your mind?
Yeah.
You don't
after
have water,
water
and...
After 2 days without water,
right.
you, serious hallucinogenic things happen in your brain. It literally begins to come apart. And he starts, Scooby-Doo's down there with him. He starts seeing Scooby-Doo. So there's a lot going on down there. He starts seeing the character Blue John, who was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid's chef. And he starts appearing in the canyon.
Oh, wow. Man. Wow.
He is having some dreams.
You've worked with such tremendous actors in your career, Danny. Leonardo DiCaprio and Ewan McGregor and now James Franco. What is your connection with an actor when they're trying to go through a process like this, when they're taking this journey? What do you do as a director to try to help them the best you can to get to where they need to go?
You want them to be a collaborator, really. You don't want to be telling them. You can't really tell actors like that what to do. You can kind of shape it for them so that they get better and better and they feel more and more confident about doing it. But James is really interesting because James is like, the first time I met him, I thought he was stoned. I mean, he was so out of it. I thought, what's he doing?
He was.
Answer to that. He's very abstemious, actually. He doesn't seem to take anything. He doesn't drink. But he's very, very, he's actually very, it's a front that he has, I think. He's very, very sharp. But he uses that persona, mm-hmm. which he used in Pineapple Express, of course. He floats into scenes. He's very relaxed, even the really intense scenes like there are in this film. And so he kind of surfs in.
He does make it look really easy. He's one of those guys that I watch yeah. and I go, I could do that.
I couldn't.
But you look at it and go, I could do
that.
You
never see him acting. That's what's
right.
No,
it's that lovely feeling of it just floats in. And the camera loves it, of course, because you feel at ease, even in an appalling circumstances like this guy's. So you start to enjoy yourself in the film as he tries to make the best of his days and he has these images of naked girls in a van. I thought I'd mention that.
Sure, there you go.
No, that's our audience. Now you're selling it to our audience.
Anyway, so it was very, he's a class act, I have to say. I mean, I learned a lot about cinema acting from watching him work because it's different in Britain. We're kind of like quite, we're not really cinema actors. We're quite theatrical actors.
Right.
Kind of, but he's a proper cinema actor. He just floats in there. It's beautiful.
You have a background in theater. You've done
yes,
a bunch of theater. Do you find that helps when it comes to movie work, help you understand the characterization and narrative and arc and that sort of thing when you're making a film and having trained in the theater and directed in theater?
It's a good training in the sense of working with actors, because when you work in the theater, you're not really doing anything other than spending 4 weeks rehearsing with actors.
Right.
Whereas on a movie, you actually spend, you're lucky if you spend a quarter of an hour with them before doing a scene. You
mm-hmm.
know? And you lose that. I mean, I know a lot of film directors are inhibited by actors and they don't understand how paranoid they are and they don't understand all their kind of tantrums and stuff like that. But when you work with them in the theater, you sort of know them inside out, really.
So. I always thought it should be mandatory for film and television directors to do some time in theater and to work with actors and direct a play or two, because it really must open up your eyes to acting and what that animal's like.
I'm going back to the theater, actually. After this, I'm doing a play at the National Theatre in London. I'm doing a new adaptation of Frankenstein.
Oh, man.
So that'll do me good to get back to theater, a bit of theater acting rather than
that's
all
a
this.
Big thing to take on, having had so many different versions of.
Yeah. I know, hundreds.
Scary, right?
Hundreds of versions. But we're going back to the book, and it's going to be very loyal to the book, except it's going to be from the creature's point of view, which, as far as we can tell, has never been done. He's been made sympathetic before, but it's never been seen from his point of view. So the evening begins with him literally, boom, opening his eyes.
Oh, wow.
And he's alive. He's 33, and he's suddenly alive.
And it's not
born.
Hard for him to learn his lines, because it's just, right? That's it. Danny Boyle is in studio. 127 Hours is the movie. It opens tomorrow. And we're going to come right back right after this on The Kevin and Bean Show. This is The Kevin and Bean Show, and we have Danny Boyle in the studio with us, who, of course, gave us Slumdog Millionaire, along with some other movies that you may have heard of.
Trainspotting.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. 28 Days.
Sure. 127 Hours comes out tomorrow. We've been talking to him about that. The guy's name is Aaron Ralston, and he cut off his own arm.
To survive.
Yes.
Not for the hell of it, Kevin. There was something behind that.
Don't care. I'm saying I'm not surviving. I really
get out from under a boulder.
I have a video camera. I'm saying, Mom, I'm sorry I don't have the guts, but I'm going to die right here. I hope you get this.
You are weak.
I am weak.
He doesn't go hiking. He knows his limits.
I don't cut off my own arm. We have some audio from this movie we like to play on the radio.
Nothing works better than audio from a movie on the radio.
So this is the key moment, right? This is the key moment when the rock falls, and I think this says it all. There you go.
That's a great plug. Thank you very much. That really is.
Daddy, as we look over your body of work, so many different types of films. This film, Slumdog Millionaire,
28 Days Later, the classic sort of reimagining of the zombie movie, Trainspotting, Life Less Ordinary. What attracts you to a project? It doesn't seem like you have a genre or type of film that you're particularly interested in making. You like all different kinds of things.
I think you should try and... I think I have this theory. It's not a very profound one, but it's, nevertheless, it's that your first film's your best film. His first film's always your best film in some way.
You think Shallow Grave's your best film?
In a way, yeah. Because you
but know... But that's a bummer.
But, oh, no. Well, the movie,
I mean, isn't
the
it?
Movie.
If that's the truth,
not the movie.
Your best work's always behind you.
Always behind you. And it's because you're innocent and you don't know what you're doing. Because film is so manipulative and so cunning. It's full of such cunning in a way that you get tempted to be cunning. And you'd lose that kind of innocence you have the first time. And what I always quote in my defense of that theory is the Coen brothers, who are geniuses. Genii. And you think about Blood Simple, and you just think, that's how have they ever been better than that? It's such a wonderful movie.
Amazing. It's true. Yeah.
Wonderful movie, you know. So one of the ways you can get back to that is to try and change genre, you know, so that you start a project and you don't quite know how you're going to do this.
Yeah.
So we started this one, 127 Hours. We thought, we didn't really know how we were going to film it. We kept saying it's an action movie where the hero can't move. And that was always our puzzle.
Which is a clever way to sell it, but how are you going to actually put that on the screen? Yeah.
And I think he does do it, actually. Franco does do it, because he's constantly resourceful in trying to get out of there. And then he's got this other journey that he's got to go on, which gives a sense of momentum and of moving forward rather than just being inert and stuck, you know?
What's it like to get a movie out there that people want to see? We were talking about this off the air. We were talking about how Slumdog Millionaire, you could have not promoted it for a second, and it just took off on its own.
It found its audience.
Had a life and inertia and everything on its own.
It's one of the mysteries that drive the studios mad, of course, because they can't quite control it.
They can spend millions of dollars in promotional money and still not get an audience to go see a movie.
Yeah, and then another movie will come along with nothing going for it, no stars, set in a very strange place full of like foreign languages and stuff like that, and suddenly everybody wants to see it and they can't stop people going to see it. Yeah.
Is that momentum? How do you get it going?
I couldn't tell you.
Still don't know.
If anybody knew, they would be running a studio and it would be the only and the successful studio of all time.
Yeah.
It's an amazing thing you have to bow down before. A lot of it's to do with word of mouth, the one thing the studio can't buy. And, you know, the whole advent of blogging and tweeting and everything like that just maximizes word of mouth. They try to manipulate it, but there's nothing quite like somebody turning up on a Monday morning and saying, hey, I saw this film over the weekend and you should go and see it.
Or
you don't mention it.
Yeah, right.
You don't mention it. Or, like you say, whatever you do, avoid it. Yeah.
Is a weekend like this a weekend filled with terror along with joy because you're finally getting this project out you've been working on for a year, but you want it to do well? Of course you want it to do well.
Yeah, it's very important because a lot of people have seen the movie, but we haven't sold any tickets yet.
That's true.
And you've always got to remember that. You've got to sell tickets,
yeah.
You know, because... So hopefully we will do this weekend. It starts very small, just in New York and LA, and then they grow it over a few weeks and eventually ends up on a... You know, all over America, hopefully. If all goes well.
That's the plan. Well, it really looks like a great, great movie.
It's a gripping drama.
Yeah, and it looks like you can't take your eyes off of it, and I would have bet all my money against that at the beginning, just based on the story of a guy stuck.
Yeah.
You know, but
I think in the end it's...
Is it James Franco?
Yeah, in the end it's Franco. It's not that Rock. Really, it's
The Rock gives a good performance, though. Let's not shut down The Rock.
It's more than a supporting
for your consideration. Best supporting role.
Best supporting male. Well, supporting
roll down a hill.
What about the music? I'm fascinated by music in movies, and that can make or break a movie as well.
I love doing the music more than anything. We got the guy who did the music for Slumdog Millionaire to do this, A.R. Rahman, but we got a few tracks in it as well. We got this amazing band, Free Blood, at the beginning with this track, Never Hear Surf Music Again, which opens the movie, which people don't know, but yet. It feels very familiar, and it gives us a wonderful footing for the... And then you have these tracks in it, different... There's a wonderful Esther Phillips song, If You Love Me, Really Love Me, in the middle of it, a very moving song, and there's a bit of Sigur Rós at one point. So it's a wonderful soundtrack, actually, which I believe is out at the moment. Yeah.
That has to be really difficult, though, because you have the world of songs is your... Too many choices.
What I love about songs is that there's a library that we all share. Like my daughters... Like, there's a Bill Withers song in it that she used, Lovely Day, which is used beautifully in the film. Now, my daughters weren't alive when that song was out.
Right.
But they know it, like I know it. They're kind of familiar with it. They know it's got used ironically at one point in the film. And they kind of, and I love that we share a library together of this culture we carry around, which is music.
Yeah, popular music is sort of a cultural shorthand where we all can sort of have touchstones, and emotionally you're immediately connected up with something.
Yeah, and it's not language-based either, because you go to France and Germany promoting the film, and they all know the Bill Withers song, you know, and they all know there's Ça Plaine Pour Moi, this other song that's in it. And so it's... Yeah, it's the best bit of filmmaking.
It seems like it would be the most fun, but also it just seems like you'd have so many choices you wouldn't be able to narrow it down. You know, it seems like a difficult process.
You can tell straight away as soon as you use it.
You can.
You just know. No, that's
because you know the mood you're trying to set.
Well, it's funny. It's a bit invisible, really. You think, oh no, that's not right at all. But, and then, oh yeah, that's perfect. That seems absolutely.
And then someone will say, why is that one not right and that one right? And your answer is,
I don't know. You try and explain it. It's like they have that saying in it, talking about music is like dancing about architecture. It's just it's pointless, really. You might as well just listen, really.
Well, we couldn't be more excited. We really appreciate that you came into the studio today. Yeah. We know you have a lot of promotion to do, so we really do appreciate that you
came.
Oh,
no, cool. Thank you very much for having
best
me.
Of luck with the Olympic Games, by the way, in 2012.
Right. Danny Boyle is going to be
fascinating.
Directing the opening ceremonies for the 2012 Olympics in London, England.
Yeah, because it's like I live about a mile from the stadium. I live in London, and it's
so you're going to be there anyway.
So you just wanted to work at home anyway.
They just pick whoever appointment closest. Saves on travel expenses. It's like it makes sense all round, you know.
Anyway, to cut a buck, I understand.
That seems cost saving. That seems daunting.
Everybody stop says that. You gotta stop saying
that's
that.
That's an impossible job, is what I'm saying. It's impossible.
Danny thought it'd be like a candle and somebody's singing a song. It'd be fine. No problem. No.
Danny, thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it. 127 hours tomorrow.
Thanks very much.
There you go. That's over. That's not coming back no matter what happens. That's not going to continue even if I stop talking forever.
Nope.
It's the world famous K-Rock at 9:43.
Let's give it a try.
This is the Kevin and Bean Show. We're getting ready to go to Las Vegas. That's why things are
going
down.
Let's go. Let's go.
Now look.
Get on the bus.
If I was going to be honest.
Everybody on the bus.
If I'm going to be honest, I'd say maybe today was the best day to listen to the Kevin and Bean Show.
I think you're probably right.
And then like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday would be, and then tomorrow, bring it up the rear.
Oh, Lisa.
Hello.
Because we're going to be in Vegas.
Because that's Vegas.
Take it at the rear.
I'm saying we're going to be in Vegas. That's my point.
Yeah, and listen, we're going to be partying tonight at the Kevin and Bean Las Vegas Road Trip Singles Party. And so we're going to be partying tonight. That's what I'm saying. And then we have to do a show early tomorrow morning, which isn't always a recipe for success, I'm saying, when it comes to our shows.
Not even sometimes. It's never a recipe for success. No.
Best case scenario, it'll be so horrible and such a train wreck that you'll get a kick out of just hearing us be bad. But I guarantee you there won't be a really good show in the future tomorrow.
Look, 4 out of 5 days, what do you want from us?
Today was great.
That's what
Red
I'm saying.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, fascinating interview with those guys. Band been around for a long time, learned a lot of things about them I didn't know, which you wouldn't think would be possible for guys who have been around that long.
Right.
Danny Boyle, how great was that guy?
Fantastic.
For an amazing interview from a super talented director with a great film coming out this week.
Nice. Man.
Amber Tamblyn from the same film, 127 hours. Just a good show today. So, and it's free. So just keep that in mind tomorrow. We don't charge you for this show.
Time for the showbiz beat. Here's Ralph.
Hugh Jackman needs to be in better shape.
Yep.
He claims.
What?
Listen a second, Mike. That's right. Yeah, he's got a belly. He's not swollen up. He's on a vascular wall.
For what? What's he doing that he needs to be in better
shape? Well, he's working on yet another Wolverine sequel. And he tells In Touch magazine that he's not in shape enough, which is ridiculous when you look at the guy who's just in amazing shape. He's in his 40s, and he's just not an ounce of fat on him. He's just built.
He really is, in my opinion, the best out there in Hollywood as far as like physiques and really having like an action hero build. Because all these other guys are just fakers.
Take this from a guy who stares at men's bodies a lot.
Hey, you're bumping into me with something down there. Take it easy.
He dominates my spank bank.
Oh, man. Anyway, he's working on another Wolverine sequel, and he said he's got to start training harder. So the good part is he gets to eat a lot.
All right.
Because, you know, when you're training and trying to build muscle, you do get to eat a lot of protein and stuff. But don't get to eat anything fun, that's for sure. Speaking of movies, Angelina Jolie's having a meltdown, according to In Touch magazine. She's currently directing a film in Budapest, as the locals call it.
Sure.
She's only working about 5 hours of sleep a night. She's got her kids with her, which is sad. It's a bad idea.
She got like 12 kids?
Yeah, you don't want them running around the set while you're trying to direct a movie.
And you're not acting, you're directing.
Brad Pitt is there trying to give his support, but apparently the town she's shooting in doesn't want the production there, and they're protesting and giving the production a hard time. Which making a movie is difficult under the best of circumstances.
Protesting.
When you got the villagers with torches and pitchforks chasing you around, Plus, your kids are running around.
Wait, they have torches and pitchforks?
Oh, the poor, yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that's how they'd still
did
it.
Did you see a Frankenstein movie? That's how the villagers, when they uprise, that's what they look like. They're carrying torches and pitchforks. I feel bad for her. I'd like to help her.
I would, too.
Yeah.
Did Angelina Jolie ask about Kevin?
Nope.
Did you need my help? She didn't need anything?
Scarlett Johansson's making a new movie. Just signed on to a film called Under the Skin.
Yeah.
Where apparently she plays an alien who disguises herself as an incredibly sexy woman and snares her human prey by meeting them on remote highways and desolate spots and then absorbing them with her voracious sexuality.
Okay, then.
Doesn't it sound like a 13-year-old boy wrote this?
Yeah. Okay, Scarlett Johansson's really hot, and she's so hot I can't resist her, and then she takes me in, like, this desolate bathroom at a truck stop and absorbs me. So, yeah, you can look for that coming to you soon. That's the good news. Bad news is Miley Cyrus has a new movie as well. Hollywood trades are saying that she's got a new action comedy in the works called So Undercover.
God damn it.
I hate her.
What the hell is that? That's not sexy.
She plays a tough, street smart private investigator who the FBI brings in to go undercover into a college sorority. Ah, I'm laughing already.
Yeah. Wait, Miley Cyrus?
I haven't seen this. Miley Cyrus, yeah.
No.
She goes so undercover. Get it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And from the bad idea file, NBC has announced they are developing a situation comedy based on the writings of Chelsea Handler.
Oh, this is your personal hell.
I just thought...
I didn't even know who she was when you started telling me how much you hated her.
I thought television really couldn't go any further into the toilet. Now they're basing TV shows around... It's been enough that she has now two shows on E!, but now NBC is going to be basing a sitcom around her her books.
Yeah.
They're taking the title of one for the project, apparently. Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea.
See, because that's probably what a person that's praying to God would say.
Because that's a spoof on another book called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
See?
See? Mm-hmm. And so what she's done is replaced God with vodka.
How did she do it?
They should just give her the whole network.
Give her
all of NBC and just let her write everything. The only saving grace is she won't be playing the titular role of Chelsea in this project. They will be casting someone who is less vomitous, it says here in this story.
Does it say that?
Right there. Well, it says it in crayon. I wrote it in the corner, but still, less vomitous. And Jennifer Beals has a new TV series. Remember Jennifer Beals from Flashdance?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
She was also had a great arc on Lie to Me.
Yes.
With Tim Roth.
Ex-wife.
As the ex-wife, and she was really good on that show, and apparently she impressed execs enough that Fox is giving her own series called The Chicago Code. She's playing a cop in The Chicago Code. Thank God there's a cop movie on television or cop TV show. I don't see enough of those. It's going to premiere on Fox right after the Super Bowl, so apparently they've got high hopes for it. That's always a very
coveted spot.
Coveted spot right after the Super Bowl when they make that premiere. So good news for Jennifer Beals. Hope she wears that sweatshirt off her shoulder.
It's a good look.
Those leg warmers?
Sure.
What a feeling.
Oh, man.
She used to give me when I would see her in those pictures. I'm just saying what? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Stop.
Just saying I always got a special feeling when I saw her in those clothes. That's all. Today's celebrity birthdays are pal Kathy Griffin's 50 years old today. Ralph Macchio, the Karate Kid, is 49. Survivor host Jeff Probst is 49 years old. Get on the bus, everyone.
Are you okay?
Diddy celebrates his 41st birthday. And Matthew McConaughey.
F*** hippies. I mean, period.
F***
hippies. Been saying that my whole life. Be saying it till I die. F*** hippies.
How are you going to come at Matty Mac like that?
Matty Mac?
My co-star from Two for the Money.
And by co-star, you mean he was in it?
As was I. We were both in it.
Yeah.
And we shared the screen.
I don't remember you sharing
any screen. Well, maybe you need to Netflix Two for the Money and take a good hard look again, because every scene I'm in, Matty Mac's in.
But the camera's on Matty Mac.
It's on both of us.
No,
yes,
it is. All right.
McConaughey! Ooh-ah!
Oh, happy birthday, man. Yeah. Oh, it's your birthday! Didn't buy a present, no. Oh, ooh-ah.
Al Pacino was awesome.
Great Al Pacino.
Yeah. Great Al Pacino. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph.
Come on now!
This is the Kevin and Bean Show. Tomorrow morning, an all-new program. We are going to be live from Luxor, Las Vegas.
And by live...
And by live, I mean...
You'll probably be there.
We will be broadcasting.
Yes, yeah. That'll be happening.
Yeah.
Adam Carolla, This Week in Rage.
Yeah.
Take a look at the movies with the Movie Beat because it's Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk to James Franco.
Really?
Yes.
Yes. About 127 hours.
He's not going to enjoy that conversation.
We're going to talk to the sports book director for MGM and Luxor.
I got to lay some bets down.
Yeah. And we're going to talk to the guy behind The Walking Dead on AMC, which is the new...
How appropriate. He'll be talking to us tomorrow, yeah. The Walking Dead.
Yeah, so that's all happening tomorrow
talking
morning.
The Talking Dead.
On an all-new Kevin and Bean Show live from Las Vegas. Kat Corbett is up next. She has 40 minutes nonstop K-Rock. She's got Linkin Park, Neon Trees.
I love Danny Boyle. He's one of my favorite directors.
She's got a new song that's not na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na from My Chemical Romance. Yeah. And Vampire Weekend coming up as part of 40 minutes nonstop.